Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 29th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, @nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in scripture reading. It was in the book of Romans. We're reading from the book of Romans, chapter 11. I say then, hath God cast away his people? God forbid. For I also am an Israelite, of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. God hath not cast away his people, which he foreknew. Wot ye not that the scripture saith of Isaiah, how he made intercession to God against Israel, saying, Lord, they have killed thy prophets and digged down thine altars, and I am left alone. They seek my life. But what saith the answer of God unto him? I have reserved to myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to Baal. Even so, then, at this present time also there is a remnant according to the election of grace. And if it by grace, then it is no more of works. Otherwise grace is no more grace, but it be of works. Then is it no more grace, otherwise work is no more work. What then? Israel hath not obtained that which he seeketh for, but the election hath obtained it, and the rest were blinded. According as it is written, God hath given them the spirit of slumber eyes, that they should not see, and the ears, that they should not hear, unto this day. And David saith, let their table be made a snare, and a trap, and a stumbling block, and a recompense unto them. Let their eyes be darkened, that they may not see, and bound down their back away. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? God forbid. But rather, through their fall, salvation is come unto the Gentiles, for to provoke them to jealousy. Now, if the fall of them be the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you, Gentiles, inasmuch as I am the apostle of the Gentiles, I magnify mine office. If by any means I may provoke to emulation them which are my flesh, and might save some of them. For if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? For if the first fruits be holy, the lump is also holy, and if the root be holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off, and thou being a wild olive tree were grafted in among them, and were them partakers of the roots and the fatness of the olive tree. Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Thou wilt then say, the branches were broken off, that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed, lest he also spare not thee. Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but towards thee goodness, if thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou also shalt be cut off. And they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again. For if they were cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? For I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own conceit. Then blindness in part has happened to Israel, until the fullness of the Gentiles come in. And so it is in this fashion all Israel shall be saved. As it is written, there shall come out of Zion the Deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. For this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins. As concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sake. For the gifts and calling of God are without repentance. For as ye in time past have not believed God, yet have now obtained mercy through their unbelief. Even so have these also now not believed, that through your mercy they also may obtain mercy. For God hath concluded them all in unbelief, that he might have mercy upon all. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God! How unsearchable are his judgments, and his ways past finding out! For who hath known the mind of the Lord? Or who hath been his counselor? Or who hath first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again? For of him, and through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory for ever and ever. Amen. That was the book of Romans, chapter 11. Okay, we're not going to have a particular subject tonight, of course. People ask questions, and maybe we can get a good subject matter going, but we'll see how things go. By the way, how am I coming through? Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through fine now, John, but the reading was very low.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to put that together on that, but... you know, I guess people will just have to raise their volume when they're listening to that and lower it when I come on. I'm going to try something a little different. I pre-recorded all of Romans one chapter at a time, but next book we start on, I want to try something a little different. Mm-hmm. And we're more than halfway through the book. Okay, I watched over the weekend, and I just watched the whole part of it. I saw parts of this interview over the weekend, and... right before the program started, I was watching this interview. I got it up on our page right now. And if anybody wants to watch it, it's a Bill Barr interview. It's really, really good. And he's kind of revealing here. Matter of fact, every time Barr speaks, he's revealing of something. And I guess the time has come to really reveal. And he's talking about a lot of indictments concerning what's been going on, and a lot of arrests that actually have been taking place. I guess we're not hearing about it, but this interview is really good. You'll find it on our news page. Just click on the news, nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on just news, and you'll find it. It's the first video up there on this page. Let's see. Hopefully, this is the right page. There it is. Yep, the first video up there. So anyway, people might want to take a look at that. All right, well, anyway, we're going forward with a lot of things. We're still doing joinders. We're still doing habeas corpuses. We did a couple of habeas corpuses recently. And I know there are a lot of joinders that have become ripe for decisions and orders. And I'm kind of hoping maybe this week to get them out. I think there's going to be quite a few of them coming up right now. We have been issuing decisions and orders. We'll be issuing a lot more, and of course we'll be doing a lot more indictments for those judges who refuse to adhere to the law. Just to go back to that Barr interview, I was really happy to hear when Barr spoke about our government. He didn't call it a democracy, he called it a democratic republic, which is, I believe, what Jefferson called it too. Democratic being the way that we choose our lawmakers or our representatives.
But republic is what we're ruled under. We're ruled by the law, not by mob rule, law rule. And it's very important that we start using the language. I've been thinking about doing an information to President Trump concerning language, concerning the more use of constitutional language, which from time to time Trump does use, but I think it needs to be brought up more often and with an emphasis on our Constitution, because that's the only thing that's going to save us. Ultimately, of course, the mercy of God is the only thing that's going to save us, but it'll be through our Constitution that we will be saved as a nation, and through our Bill of Rights, and through our foundation of law, as spelled out and declared quite clearly in the Declaration of Independence. So, anyway, we are going forward with more paperwork and more papers. We did file it. I don't think I posted it yet. Let me take a look here. I might have posted we did do a paper suing YouTube and Google and a few others. I know we spoke about it. I'm not sure whether we put it up or not yet. I guess I didn't. I don't see it. I don't know that it would be on this page, but maybe it would. Well, I guess it should be on this page because it's the grand jury that's suing YouTube. And their mother corporation, I believe, is ABC Inc. Of course, all of these companies are pretty well connected. You got Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and I know there's one I'm missing. I can't think of it, but in any event.
John, but, at the bottom of your grand jury tab, very last action.
Oh, okay. I put it, action against YouTube. I guess I gave it its own page. I forgot all about it. I can do so much after a while, I forget what I even do. So. Okay, yep, here it is, action against YouTube. And you can click on that, and people could read it. You should read it. The funds that we're suing for will go directly to National Liberty Alliance, ultimately to be for the purpose of organizing the nation and again, of course, supporting all of the work of the grand jury, whatever cost factors come up. We have finished... some books. I'm looking for a publisher right now for the book, which I originally was going to call Liberty Lost, but I decided to go with the Consent of Government, or Government by Consent. And hopefully I'll get a publisher to work with us and get this going. I understand it could come through quite quickly if we can get a publisher working with me and get it up quite quickly. The book is completed. We just have to put some acknowledgments in there, and I got a few, maybe another page or two that I have to write in the front of the book. We also wrote a book, just to step back a bit, Brent has written a book called The Militia of the Several States, which is available. You'll find it on the right-hand side of our website. You can click on it. It's a pocket handbook, and you can purchase it. I'm not sure. I think it's $5 for the book. I forget what it is, but you'll be led to a place where you can purchase that booklet. And it's a pocket handbook. It's just like the Constitution or the Common Law Handbook that we wrote. So that book is available, and we did do a course on that, which is the militia course, and people should be taking the militia course also as much as the Government by Consent course and our civics course. We'll be putting together, I'm not sure whether we're going to do a course or just another book, a handbook. I got to think about it, how we're going to handle this, but we did do three other handbooks. We did a handbook, an administrator's handbook, for jury administrators, sheriffs, and coroners. And that book is pretty well complete. I know Brent is researching a couple of items for us to be added into that book. I think Gerard's looking at an item or two that will be added into that book. But other than that, they should be coming to an end at this point with their research, and hopefully we'll get that together and we'll get this booklet done this week. We also put together a book which is a handbook for the grand jury, So it's a grand jury handbook. It sort of introduces the people that are going to sit as a grand jury to the Constitution and to our heritage and the authority and what is law and equity, to give them an orientation and a basic understanding, a foundation for them to take into the court and properly make some good decisions. We did the same thing with the petit jury, the trial jury, whereas we wrote a book for them also. And that booklet is done. And I think a couple of the items that, like I said, Gerard and Brent are working on will probably add into that book also. There'll be one other book which will be a more detailed handbook of specifics and procedures and different things for the administrator. Whether we create a course for that or not, I'm not sure. I think we might create a course for that, but we will have a handbook. Now, all these handbooks, you know, we've been trying to get a lot of these handbooks reprinted out. Well, particularly the handbook, the common law handbook. We also wrote another book, which again is a handbook. It's a sheriff's handbook. And I want to go back through that common law handbook and the sheriff's handbook. Maybe I'll get time this week to go through that and move a few things around and maybe put in a few other little things and get that book, those books in, more in order. So there'll be quite a few handbooks, counting them, I guess, 3, 4, 5, about 6 of them, roughly speaking. And they're pretty much all written, so they'll be going into, we're going to push them into print also. We may self-publish those particular books. They may, of course, run a little more expensive, being that we will be selling them. Maybe we'll go through Amazon in order to do self-publishing. We may go through some other publishers that do self-publishing. I'm not sure exactly where we're going to go, how we're going to go with that. But, again, if it cost us a dollar per book to print, or $1.50 or $2, let's say, and shipped, then we'll probably sell it for $5 or $4 or something. We'll figure something out, and we'll try to work something out with someone wanting to buy bulk, maybe 50 booklets or something, or 100. We'll probably figure out some bulk rates. But I do want to get them out there so we can move the books. Originally, you know, we wanted to get these books published. We were pushing for about $40,000, which we'd like to get together, where we'd be able to print enough books, sheriff handbooks particularly this was, and which would be pocket handbooks with the Constitution. And we were going to try to get them out to sheriffs. So the cost of printing the books, quite a few thousand, because we have 3,100, let's say 3,100 counties, so 3,100 sheriffs, roughly speaking. And we'd want to send at least 20 to every sheriff, because they got deputies. And some would request more, I'm sure, if they got more deputies, and we would want to be able to send it to them. And so we were looking at printing quite a few books. I don't remember what the number was, but we did work out a price. Just off the top, 3,000 times 10 is 30,000, or times 20 is 60,000. So I think we were looking to print off maybe about 80 or 100,000 books, and then ship them out to the sheriffs. Once we would get them, then we'd have to package them and ship them out. So a lot of work and a lot of things, and we'd like to have done that for free, but we just have been unable to achieve that kind of funding, so it's quite a bit of money. Maybe what we'll do here is we'll get these booklets going. We'll try to sell them as cheap as possible, especially if anybody buys them by the bulk. We want to get them as cheap as, really as cheap as possible, so that people in their own counties could order maybe 50 handbooks and get a bunch of them out to their sheriffs. And of course, all these other booklets are important to have. But at some point in time, hopefully we'll have enough funding, we'll be able to just purchase, hundreds of thousands of all these different handbooks and then be able to just send them out for free pretty much to the people that we need to get them into their hands. We'll see how things go. Anyway, that's a lot of what we've been working on, and we're pretty much there with the books. We do have the Sheriff's Handbook available right now to be downloaded. I think most of these booklets, well, not the ones we just finished writing, but I think the Common Law Handbook for sheriffs and jurists and judges, I think we have a copy of that, a PDF copy, so people can download that and read it if they want in a PDF copy. Same thing with the Sheriff's Handbook. You can download that up on our website. So anyway, that's what we're doing with booklets and trying to get the information out. We got a lot of things going on in the background, and hopefully we'll be able to discuss some of these things as time comes up. But we're working on a lot of things. We do need a lot more people to help. We need lots of volunteers. And so anybody that can give us time, we're looking for paralegals, if anybody's a paralegal out there. If anyone's a lawyer out there and has come to an appreciation and understanding of the common law and is walking down that road, so to speak, and moving away from the civil law, we need people on that level too. Need people, all kinds of people, people with experience and people without experience. So we're not just looking for people with experience. We need a lot of people to make phone calls for us. We need to contact a lot of our membership maybe that has fallen asleep. We'll try to rekindle them, get them back up. We had a lot of people that were in leadership roles, but they have sat for a long time and they weren't doing anything. And even if people don't do anything, they fall asleep. And so we're trying to reactivate those people also. We have, we have 1,189 grand jury administrators, people, so we have 1,108, almost 1,200 people volunteered to take those positions. That position, when it becomes available, people need to be educating themselves right now to prepare for that job. And by taking our courses and reading our books and having the handbooks, reading those handbooks and having them for the purpose of reference. And again, there will be a special handbook written specifically for, details and instructions for the administrators. But this is a paid position, professional position, full-time in your county. So anybody who would like to volunteer for that, just go up to your account, my account, and you should be able to find a place in there where you can click a box, which you then would become a grand jury. You'd be putting yourself on a list in your county as the grand jury administrator. If the county that you're looking to do that kind of thing, take up that position, is full, if there's four people already there, you can work in the county next door, or maybe you just want to work in the county next door because maybe the courthouse is closer. But you don't have to work in the county you live in. But when it comes down to the end of it, the bottom line, once we're ready to go, if there's more than four people looking to take that position within that county, because it's four people per county, whoever is complete with the courses will take those positions before those who are not. So it's important to get through these courses and prepare ourselves for the necessary knowledge we need in order to, fill these positions and meet out the necessary instructions and assistance to the juries that we need to give them. National Liberty Alliance will always be here for the sole purpose of continuing to educate people, as time comes on and people retire or new people come in, whatever the case may be. These positions need to be filled and need to be educated and prepared for these positions. And also they'll, from time to time, be questions or situations that we haven't addressed, and we'll be here to answer those questions. And if we don't have the knowledge of the answer, we will surely research it and find it, and then add it to our information as far as instructions to administrators and others. We're also preparing a plan which will run straight alongside with the jurist and the grand jury handbook. We're going to create maybe a 6-hour presentation for the jurist in preparation for them to be grand jurist or trial jurist. And again, it's the fundamental things that people should be aware of. Your heritage. The fact that the people make the law. We make the law. That's very important for people to understand. We, the people, make the law. We're the lawmakers. And that law that we made is the three documents, our founding documents. And we have given instructions to the three branches of government of their authority, the jurisdictions. And of course, we've given them, we've vested them with certain powers. We've vested our legislators to write necessary equity, law and equity, which is called positive law by man. But we, the people, have the final say of whatever they write. And this is important for people that are free and independent to understand that we decide the law. So we can accept a law, a statute, for instance, in a case that may be applied towards an individual who is being tried in law, not in equity, but in law, but is controlled by statutes and rules and regulations and the penalties that come along with that. They're controlled by those things because they're working for government agencies or they're involved in commercial activities. That's the law that they get to write. But we get the final word on it. We have the power of nullification. So, and that's what the people, when people are judging as a tribunal in a court of law, which is natural law, and if it's an individual that is being charged with some crime and commercial activity, therefore, or someone that works for some government agency is being charged with a crime, then those statutes apply to those individuals, for they were written for those individuals as sort of like policies and procedures, things you can do and things you can't do, regulations and statutes, laws. It becomes, this is the law. You break the law, there's a penalty. So for those people, they can, the statutes and other, codes, regulations, rules, and everything can apply to those people. But again, the important thing is we may not like it. We may disagree with that. We may feel that it's unconstitutional and cast it out, nullify it. Or we may feel and believe that, it's a pretty good law, but it doesn't apply in this case for whatever circumstances we might think it does, shouldn't. So we can discard it, or we can take a penalty and make it heavier or lighter. We can do whatever we want. People need to understand that power and authority. That's what makes us free and independent. We are the deciders. We decide what is the law and what is not the law through the juries. We decide who gets into office and who doesn't, who we're going to put onto the ballot through the committeeman process. We decide through the committeeman process who we want to remove for whatever reasons, because maybe they're violating their oaths. We can remove them potentially. If it's a crime, we can remove them to the jury, which could be quite quickly, a grand jury. Or we can remove them through the committeeman, which is a 90-day process for recall. There's a procedure and a process and a time in order to accomplish that goal, in order to recall someone. I believe there's actually something already written. We just have to pull it together. I'm pretty sure we do have that. There is a process on recall. But anyway, all these things are necessary for a free people. And it's necessary for the people to educate themselves and take control and have government by consent. It's necessary for every individual to be part of the militia as much as being part of anything else. It is necessary for we the people to participate in the committeeman process and becoming a committeeman at least once in your life. And it doesn't matter what else you're doing. As long as you're not elected individual, You can be an administrator. You can be on the grand jury. You can be on the trial jury. You can be anything, and participate with that as a committee man. So everyone should be a committee man at least once in their life. It's a 2-year period, about 40 or 50 hours a year, and it's mostly around the election time. And that's it. It may be less than 40 hours a year. But it's exciting. It's empowering. And it's involving. It gives us the opportunity to get statesmen. And if we, the people, were doing this, we would have statesmen in there instead of politicians. Statesmen just like President Trump, who is a statesman, or Ron Paul, statesman, not interested in the political realm at all, making the decisions for the benefit of the people. So, you know, the fact that we've lost control is because we're ignorant to that control. And it's time for people to become educated to take back that control. And this is the way we do it. I guess that's about all I have to say. Jan, do we have any questions? And do we have anything coming up, any announcements?
Yeah, I have one announcement. We're in the process of trying to get the word out. We're trying to use the Facebook pages of people. Within a week or so, we got 2,500 views on your talk on introduction to NLA. Now, what we're trying to do, everybody, probably all our members, have a Facebook account. If they don't, it's easy to get one. And then next week's newsletter, I'll have a section in there under the announcements explaining how you can go to our Facebook page, the National Liberty Alliance Facebook page. There'll be a link there to click. You can go to the site, look and see anything that you think would be interesting to people, copy it and put it on your Facebook page and send it out to, you know, as many people as you can, and try and spider it out, magnify it, and make it move faster. And we'll be changing the information on the Facebook page or adding to it continually. One of the things we're trying to do is to get people to the website to take the courses that we have, the 4K courses that we still have. So we'll have information next week on that. Watch for it. And it should be easy to use, and we hope everybody will take advantage of it. It'd be a real blessing to us. It'd be an excellent way to get information out to people, and that's what we need to do. Other than that, I see we have Sheriff Dar on the menu tonight, and Brent are both in the room, and then I have a bunch of questions too.
All right. How many questions do you have?
About 5-6.
Okay. Maybe we'll put the questions aside. We'll ask them after.
Okay.
Before we move on, I just wanted to go back to the six-hour thing I was talking about for orientation for the jury. These booklets we're writing, we're going to create orientations from these booklets, and of course, each jurist will be handed a booklet. Everything we'll be talking about really will be really, forging a foundation for them. In order for them to proceed properly in the job that's before them as a trial jury or a grand jury. Again, if they don't understand that they have the power and the authority of jury nullification, they don't understand that we make the law. You know, with the exception of natural law, of course, you know, we the people are under natural law, which is called common law. We're judged under that. If we do a wrongdoing, that's where all are judged. Not only we the people, but also people that are in the commercial activity, even though, again, statutes are applied to them in accordance to whatever it is that they're doing commercially. And of course, people working for the government, different agencies, they are governed by, again, the statutes. And so those things apply. But people need to be able to understand they can get rid of a bad statute or maybe a good statute that's applied against the person, but we don't feel confident that it works in that case. You know, again, we have total control on that. The jury not only has the authority to decide the facts and the law, they also have the power and the authority to decide the penalty, and the penalty should always be with an eye on restitution towards an injured party. Jail is not necessarily the penalty that should be paid. Of course, there are certain things, of course, jail would be proper for, you know, murder, violent things, things of that nature. You know, there are a few things that it may be appropriate, but people will decide, and that's the key. Each case is a case on its own. You know, no other case similar to that really should apply to another case, because a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. So, you know, each case is unique on its own and needs to be decided on its own facts and whatever law people feel they need to apply, if those kind of laws need to be applied. But, of course, natural law is applied in all these cases. Okay, I guess with that, I guess we'll open up the mic for Sheriff Dar and make sure that Brent, if he's not signed in as a moderator, make sure his mic is open also. But go right ahead. Did you say that we're both here right now?
I didn't catch that, John.
Did you say both Sheriff Dar and Brent is here right now?
Yeah, they're both here in the room.
Okay, so have you unmuted them?
I have not yet.
Okay.
Let me find them.
And then after we finish our conversation, we'll do the questions maybe. We'll see how long this takes before we go, because Brent's going to also talk on some things.
Well, here we go. Here's Sheriff Dar. This does not look like he is muted for some reason. Here we go. Yeah, he is.
Am I unmuted now?
Yep,
you're unmuted. Go ahead, Sheriff. Yeah, Sheriff, go right ahead. Did you want to start the conversation off? I don't know if you wanted to talk about some of these things privately, or you want to talk about them in public now, or whatever it is that you want to discuss. Is Brent unmuted also?
Yep, he is now.
Okay.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, how are you?
You're having a good night so far.
Well, John, did you want me to wait till Sheriff Dar says what's on his mind?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was just told tonight that Sheriff wanted to bring some things up. I don't know if he wanted to get into a discussion on some of the things we've been talking about, or he had some other things in mind, or, you know, some of these other things may be better in private right now. Or, I don't know. It's up to him.
Oh, just some things for Brent there real quick. He asked me a while back if I had some ideas for some stuff that he was working on for law enforcement, because we all take an oath of office for the Constitution of the United States. How many of these officers actually read the Constitution? So he's been working on some stuff for law enforcement. And one thing I forgot to mention to you, Brent, was property rights. Like, we deal a lot with property rights, with like landlord-tenant stuff. Taxes.
Uh-huh.
He's not paying any property taxes here. And we don't understand land patents very well. You know, just stuff like that we're not taught. And so we kind of learn as we go. Michigan's got a law, if you don't pay your land, your property tax, that you forfeit the property to the state. And so if you're down $8,000 on property tax and your property's worth $300,000, you know, you're out all that money.
But just so you know, that property tax is unlawful. It's unconstitutional. If you have a piece of property and you're paying, and you have to pay a tax on it every year, And if you don't pay it, they take it away from you. You really don't own it. And so private property is not taxable. I mean, that's something they started in the 1800s, maybe even later than that. I know in England they got something with the property where people don't really even own it. And matter of fact, if you read the legal papers of your title for your property or whatever they call that, it doesn't talk as if you're the land owner, but I'm not sure whether they use the word tenant. There's another word I think they use for that. Do you know what it is, Brent?
No, I don't. Tenant would be somebody, of course, that's renting a piece of property from another fellow.
Well, absolutely. And I don't think it's the word tenant, but it's very similar to that. I forget what it is. I don't know if Gerard's on, because I know Gerard and I looked into this, and the language really makes it clear that you know, you don't really own it as far as the government is concerned, which is not true, of course.
The rights or the taxes on land go back to the year 1066 and forward, when William the First invaded England and conquered England. He declared the common law in force, but he put in place a system that would provide for national defense. And the system that provided for national defense had to do with land tenancy. It is true that everything that's valid law has to relate back to the land or it won't last. That's what is the foundation of all of the rights. In fact, property rights and land, that's the set of rights out of which all rights come. Of course, all right, all authority, all jurisdiction, Romans chapter 13, verse 1, is from the lawgiver, God himself, and it is dispensed through men sometimes, through men, to men, where it is dispensed from God himself, direct the individual. We call those fundamental rights. Well, what William did was he provided for something that drew all, very ingenious, it drew all men together in England to a common purpose, which was defense of the land. But he did it through what he called the knight's fee. And he parceled all of his land, all of the land, he declared himself owner of all land in England. He was the allodial landlord. That's what he fashioned himself to be. That word allodial is a Nordic Scandinavian word. Of course, William the First was a Norwegian, but his family had lived on the coast of France and had conquered the coast of France and been there about 165 years. And they called that place they conquered Normandy. And if you remember your history, Normandy is where the Americans and the Canadians and the Brits stormed the beaches in 1944, June the 6th. That was Normandy. That's where the Norwegians had come down from Norway, William the Conqueror, and conquered the coast of France and lived there. Well, they brought with them ideals of their common law. And one of those ideals was what is allodial title. The Scandinavian nations, along with the Germanic people in Saxony and the Danes, all those folk, they had an idea, a concept in their understanding of reality called allodial title. And that word allodial is an old Germanic Scandinavian word. And what it means is that the fellow that has allodial title doesn't owe anybody anything. He owes no duty, no money. Of course, in the days of William the First, in the 11th century, money was unknown. Money wasn't wealth. There was no money. So when he established his system of national defense, he parceled out all the land of England. He was the allodial landlord, remember, and he parceled it all out to about 200 of his most faithful officers that had been with him in the conquering, the Battle of Hastings, down the south of England. And he said to each one of them, okay, you've got this many acres of land, therefore you owe me this many knights, K-N-I-G-H-T-S, Nights, Knights, that's a combatant, a soldier, mounted. You owe me this many mounted knights, fully mounted, fully trained, and fully armored for at least up to 40 days a year. And then those fellows said, oh, okay, the 200 officers that owed so much according to how much land they had, they could afford it. Then they parceled the land out to other people and said the same thing to them in order that so they could meet their quota to the king. And those folk, in turn, parceled the land out however they wanted so they could, and then they made the same assignment so they could keep their quota to their landlord who could keep his quota to the king. And on it went without limit. There was no limit how small the parcels of land became. And what happened was, very quickly, over just a few short years, and then after a few centuries, it was pretty involved. It got right down to a man that had 5 acres. All he had to provide was he had to polish the armor, a certain piece of armor. That's what his taxes on the land he held in freehold. It was called holding land in freehold, but you owed the guy above you a duty of some kind. There was one fellow I read about. His only duty, I don't know how this happened, but his only duty was he was supposed to make sure that when they crossed the English Channel to go to battle, that he provided the pillow for his landlord to lay his head on. Sometimes it amounted to a very small thing. So as taxes, I call those a kind of a tax because it's a burden, as they rolled downhill to the small landholder, even he was a freeholder, as they rolled downhill, they got smaller and smaller and smaller, you see. That was the beauty of the system, because the small landholder didn't have to put much in the kitty at all. Well, in time, of course, after the Spanish began to conquer the New World, silver became available, and after a few centuries, what they called the knight's fee was done away with. The word fee is an old Anglo-Saxon word that means cattle, because in those days, even and before that, the measure of wealth was livestock. And the word fee came to mean something that was paid. By the way, we had a fellow on the other day on Patriot Soapbox from the National Organization of Raw Materials, NORM, N-O-R-M, a very much an analyst, and he made the point, older gentleman, smart fellow, he made the point that if it doesn't rust or rot and flow to you in a continual stream, it's not wealth. True wealth rusts or rots. It's either grain in the bin, meat on the hook, that's stuff that rots, or it's metal, brass, copper, silver. It'll rust to varying degrees, of course. Gold rusts very slowly. Iron rusts very rapidly. Wood, it'll rot away or oxidize when you burn it. But if it doesn't rust or rot, it's not worth anything, really. Paper money, therefore, and computer entries are not real wealth. But they saw real wealth because they didn't have silver, and silver didn't become available in Europe until the Spanish and then, of course, the English began to reap the precious metals from the mountains or steal them. The English, of course, they got to stealing them from the Spanish during the reign of Elizabeth, Sir Francis Drake, and what was that other? Oh, Sir Walter Raleigh. She was sweet on both of them, by the way. They were robbing the Spanish and making the coffers in England rich. Well, once they got silver, especially, feudal subordination began to go by the wayside. Sam Johnson, the author of the first dictionary in the English language, said, gold and silver destroy feudal subordination. Well, that's an important concept that applies today. Listen to it again. Gold and silver destroy feudal subordination. He found that out by a simple experience when he'd go to work. Even a couple of hundred years ago, there was a boot black. They didn't call them shoeshine boys. They called them boot blacks. And once silver got available, these bootblacks, these lowly bootblacks, these shoeshine boys, began to pick their customers and get pretty choosy about it. Well, it made the rich folk mad, but once they could demand a certain price, then even the folk way down low, you see, with silver, they could choose who they only took care of the folk that they liked, that were nice to them, which is understandable. But he made that point. Now, Lodial title, I think John's got this up here. I'll read it for those of you that may not be on the internet. He put up a definition, Liberty for Life Association website. The definition of a lodial is free, not holden of any lord or superior. That means not held to, owned without obligation of vassalage or fealty, the opposite of feudal. A lodial is the opposite of feudal. But, of course, in that feudal system that William I put in place, he declared himself a lodial owner. Why was he a lodial? Well, as he fit this definition. He didn't hold his land in obligation to any lord, landlord, or any superior. So he combined the two, and people have, and that, out of that, by the way, out of that, we have what we call today our system, in America even, of land taxes, or real estate taxes, they're sometimes called. Our law makes a distinction between the phrase real estate and land. Real estate is improved upon land. That's why we call real estate agents, usually because they sell houses. That's land that's had improvement. But land is also taxed, farmland, etc. So in that system, although it was a system of taxation, there was no money involved, of course, and this was a system of national defense. But what it did was this, and this is the thing I really wanted to get to. What it did was it created a community. A community, because the man that owned 2 acres or 1 acre, or owned or held rights to it because he owed some feudal duty to the landlord above him, the man that held, if he defended by force of arms his acre, acre and a half, 2 acres, 5 acres, in doing so, he defended all the land of England. He set a precedent. And if the king defended the land by force of arms, the whole country of England, he defended the man who held only a few acres. So there was a commonality from the king right on down. That was the strength of that particular system. But then beyond that, the two duties of the militiaman, as you know, or you've heard me say before, two duties, and those two duties are oath, the oath that everyone in state and federal government, by the command of our Constitution, must take, is an old, ancient, common law oath that says we are to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. That's an ancient oath of our common law. And to defend the land against enemies, foreign, is the first duty of the militiaman. That means by force of arms. To defend the land by force of arms. The second part of that oath, that's foreign enemies. The second part of that oath, domestic enemies, that means right here at home, is enemies against the law of the land. Well, what is our Constitution? Article 6 says it is the law of the land. And when you serve on the jury, and that's the second duty of the militiaman, is to serve on the jury. When he serves on the jury, his duty is to defend the law of the land. And to defend the law of the land is to defend the land. And to defend the land is to defend the law of the land, because according to our common law and anciently, true law, the law of the land, our common law, arises from the land. It comes from the sky, where the lawgiver resides, to the land from whence we have all things. Our lawgiver has chosen to do it that way. That's why Jesus Christ taught his disciples to pray in the what's called the Lord's Prayer, which really wasn't the Lord's Prayer, it was the disciples' prayer. Jesus Christ could not have intelligently said, "Forgive us our debts as we forgive those who trespass against us." No, it's not the Lord's Prayer, it's the disciples' prayer. And when he taught them to pray, he taught them to say, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on land." Translated usually on earth, but the word there is Gaius, it means land, on land as it is in the sky. So that comes from the sky, where the maker of all things resides to the land, and we get it. That's the teaching of the Bible. And it's consonant with the teaching of our common law. That's where we get what we call, for instance, the free soil doctrine. The free soil doctrine, which says, and says of England, and we apply it also, have applied it, in the court, the Supreme Court of Illinois applied it, the Missouri applied it, other states have applied it, called the free soil doctrine, which says that if the foot of any man touches the soil of this state or this country, whatever court is saying it, that he is instantaneously, instanter, ipso facto, free. And all of the conditions of his former servitude, whatever they may be, the chains fall off upon his foot touching the soil. Well, that's the ancient doctrine that arises from the Bible and from our common law. Well, that has to do with community. The reason I mentioned that was, what is community? Community is what we're losing here. This is the bottom line problem in America. This is why the devil himself, old Scratch, using his useful idiots, such as Antifa and BLM, want to destroy community. What is community? Well, it's an old Latin word that means those, that means commonness. Commonness, the things we have in common. Now, that particular system of land taxation, yes, it has devolved into something very ugly, but at first it was all about creating a commonness of purpose. Every man, every freeholder, you see, every freeholder that had land depended upon the king and everybody between him and the king depended upon everybody between him and the lowliest, the smallest, I should say, the bottom of the system, the final landholder, depended upon all of them to defend the land. And they depended on that to defend their land also, the king himself, to call them out and defend the land and defend his parcel of real estate. And when they served on the jury, they had that commonness at every level in that hierarchy, that system. Every man, every militiaman was bound to two duties, to defend the land by armed defense if necessary, whatever he contributed, you see, and defend the law, and to defend the law of the land, which also defended the land by serving on the jury. And that was something they all had in common. They had that commonness. We call that today, because of the Latin church in the West, we call that communion. Communion. And it got down to where they said in the European world, the parish you live in and the folk you take communion with, it was perverted into what's called the Roman Mass, which is a Babylonian word, has nothing to do with Christianity, false doctrine. But communion itself, the old Lord's Supper, as the Bible presents it, was traditionally, as it grew in the Christian world, those folk that you know, that you live with, that you take communion with, you have something in common with, what, namely what? Well, that the blood of Jesus Christ cleanses us from all our sins. We have fellowship. The Anglo-Saxon word is fellowship. The Latin word is communion. The other Anglo word is commonness. Commonness. Fellowship, commonness, communion. And we have that commonness as Christian folk. If we aren't Christian folk, we don't have that commonness. And that commonness, by the way, is the only thing that will pull us together. It's the only thing that has ever pulled our country together from its very inception forward. And when you go to the graveyards in Europe where the Americans are buried, you go to Normandy, what do you see? You see thousands upon thousands of crosses. And nobody asked any questions about that back when that happened in my father's generation. But that was a shouting of what we considered to be common among us at the very most fundamental level. And if we don't have commonness at that very most fundamental level, then we will have no commonness at all. And our country will fall apart. No question. History is replete with examples, and there has never been an exception. The only thing that holds a protection of a country together is a commonness at the most fundamental level. Our Constitution of the United States is that fundamental if men recognize that it is the laws of nature, it is our observation of the laws of nature delivered direct from God Himself, the laws that unwritten volume, as Blackstone calls it. That's fundamental. and the laws of nature's God is the Bible. What we're missing is commonness. The grand jury, which is the subject here, I'll end with this. I said it in with the other, but I got to bring this around to the grand jury. The experience of the two duties of the militia, the old Anglo-Saxon furdfare, are jury duty to defend the law of the land and armed defense. The posse comitatus is a subset of that militia of your state, of which the sheriff has cognizance over, and that he calls out in case there is an insurrection or some kind of unrest, he is to call them out. By the way, we have case law on that. Case law on that, the duty of the sheriff to call out the posse comitatus to keep the peace. We have case law. I mean, in America, there is case law. And you can read about that. But the grand jury is part of that, the power to indict, the power to say yes to the government, you may take this man to trial for a crime, or no, you may not. Remember, if you're ever called to jury duty, your duty is real simple. You either say yes or you say no. You can't remain silent. You got to say one or the other. Back to you, John, or Dar, whoever has a comment.
Yeah, let me just make a comment on it, and we'll go back to Dar. I'd just like to read what we have on the browser right now. You read a part of it, but I just want to read another part. It says, the allodial title is the heart and soul of the construct of the United States of America. This is how you hold title to your land, free and clear from any taxes or encumbrances. The government cannot come onto your land. You are sovereign on your land. In America, 100 years ago or so, maybe a little more, but about 100 years ago, all property were allodial titles. That was what it was. But they changed it without asking our permission. And, of course, with evil intents of making money. It's, again, part of RICO on steroids. They've charged us taxes. And again, if you have to pay a tax, I see lists of people constantly losing their homes, especially when they retire, they're elderly, they start to get sick, and maybe the spouse is gone and they're alone. And next thing you know, the government comes in and just takes their property for taxes. I mean, what kind of a people do that to people? What kind of a government is that? This is all titles should be property titles should be allodial titles, and we do intend on moving back to that once we get onto the other side, to force common law back into our processes, because it's been completely eliminated since 1938 when they decided to get rid of common law and create civil law and place us under it without our permission, which is, an insult, but more than that, it's fraud. And it also takes us our liberty away. Land, as Brent mentioned before, land is the heart of our rights, the right of land. Our body is considered land also. Spiritually speaking, in the Bible, you can read into it that our body is the land.
So no forced vaccination, huh?
No forced, right. I spoke with my sheriff about those things, and he said he would come out and prevent anything like that from happening, anybody try to take our weapons or even try to vaccinate us, because our governor here is out of control.
John, that was the other thing I wanted to talk about, too, was you talk about property rights. Is there somebody else trying to talk?
I'm sorry. Say it again?
Is there somebody else trying to talk? I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, maybe. Let me mute.
Still there?
Yes. Go ahead, Dar.
Oh, okay. The other one was property rights, because I see happening here in Michigan just the steps of what happened in Virginia, and eventually they're going to tell us to go turn on our guns. Well, first of all, I can't find anywhere in either Constitution where it gives government the authority to take our property like that. It says take your property for public use, but I don't see anything in there that says they can just take your property. And am I wrong thinking on that? That's something else that I would like to get into law enforcement's head, that if they try banning these guns, that it doesn't matter. It is that person's property. You can't just go over and take it.
No, that's the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment. That's right. That's a astute observation that people ought to talk about more often.
It says take it for public use.
Yeah.
They're just going to go take them and just to take them away from you. There's mm-hmm. no public use.
That's right.
So how can they take our property?
And how come somebody hasn't brought a case in such a case to tell me that I can't have this or that if it's lawful? And that'd be the Fifth Amendment. And there shall be no taking of, it says in essence, the government can't take private property only for public use, and has to be by due process of law, and there has to be compensation. We see that often happening right now. I know in the Bible that came up when David came to the threshing floor, king of Israel, came to the threshing floor of Araunah. And Araunah wanted to give him everything he wanted, just give it to him. He said, you don't have to pay me for it. And David said, no. He said, no, I'll pay you for it. And I will not, he said, I will not give the Lord himself, God himself, anything that costs me nothing. I'm not going to do that. So I'm not going to take your property just because I'm the government. You're going to get paid for it. It was going to be for essentially a public use in that case. But he wanted to give it to him. He had plenty, I suppose. But no, that's an excellent point. Everything, you think about, well, they're taking our guns, so what do people do? They go to the Second Amendment. But why didn't somebody, you make the point, and it's a good point, why didn't some lawyer or somebody say, wait a minute, you're trying to take private property, and it's not for public use, you're not even trying to compensate me for it. And they do that a lot. They do it a lot under the, even the whole thing about, what do they call it? Well, Dar, you told me that thing where they, forfeiture. Yeah, civil forfeiture,
oh, yeah.
Right? All right, are you thoroughly familiar with that? Does that happen in your county?
Yeah, we're very, very strict on that. And
but you know what it is, though. Yeah, go ahead.
Pardon?
I say you know what it is, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Talk about it.
Yeah, what we, but in Michigan, what they allow is that if you have a business and it's an unlawful business, and that it would be, most of the time, it's the drug business.
Uh-huh.
So that's an unlawful business. Anything you buy and use for that business would be unlawful, which would be forfeited to the state. So if you have a vehicle you're using to transport your drugs or even the drug money, then the state says they have, they can take that car. They can take the money because the money was an unlawful business and so on. And what it also does is when you take their money, and even the federal government, sometimes you hear the officers bragging about it, they take their ability to have money to defend themselves.
Yeah,
but
you. Oh, now you've heard officers brag about that,
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the first thing they try to do is get everything you've got so you can't hire a lawyer. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or feed your family. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, when the government tries to take your property under eminent domain for a reason, you know, necessary, you know, they need to prove that. And that needs to be proven in a court of law. In other words, a jury has to make that decision, not some judge. I know here in New York, there was a property that was taken. Some large corporation wanted to do something, and they couldn't get the property away from the person who owned it. And, you know, they owned a lot of the other property, I guess, around it, but they needed one other piece of property. And somehow they got it away through using eminent domain, where the government came in and made the position, the local government, that is, made the position that because what this group of people were going to do was going to bring more funds into the town or village or whatever it was. And through that process, it actually went through, and they did take the property away. And years later, that property is still sitting there. And nothing has been done with it, but yet they took this property away from one group of people, took it away from another individual, and again, the local government was in on it because they but that they'd have taxes, more taxes. That's not a reason for eminent domain. And, of course, that's obvious to anybody that looks at it logically. But these are the kind of things that they do, all these evil things. And it's all, again, it gets back to money, payoffs, money. But if property is going to be taken away, you have to have due process. And due process requires a court of law, and a court of law requires a tribunal. And that tribunal requires the people being that decision maker. So,
well, look what they did to that police officer back with the Lautenberg Amendment back in the 90s. You guys familiar with that Lautenberg Amendment?
What is it?
The Lautenberg Amendment had to do with domestic violence, and it, I argued ex post facto and bill of attainder and also the right to due process. Well, the Lautenberg Amendment said if you have ever been convicted of a domestic assault, you had to give up your guns and ammunition. So, in other words, before the Lautenberg Amendment hit, they were going retro on something. And then it said, if you'd ever been convicted of an assault that was domestic related. So they went way retro on this domestic assault stuff, even before we even called it domestic assault. They expected you to turn in your guns and ammunition. And I'm sitting going, wait a minute here. How is that legal? First of all, ex post facto.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, due process. Because if you're in a court of law, and you're in a courtroom, and you're making this plea bargain, rather than chucking out $10,000, $20,000 for attorney fees to go fight a domestic violence, and you decide to pay a $75 fine, assault and battery, that's domestic related. They wanted you to turn in your guns and ammunition. Well, that wasn't on the bargaining table when you made that deal.
Mm-hmm.
So then they passed this Lautenberg Amendment, and all of a sudden, wow, you got to turn in your guns and ammunition.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that I want to stress that a little bit, just in case anybody might know somebody. If any restraining order has been put against anybody in any state and by any court, and it's discovered that the person that has the restraining order put against him, then if it's discovered that he has a firearm or ammunition, then he faces a possible 10 years in federal, not state, federal prison, because I don't remember the name of it, Sheriff Dar, but there is a federal law that says that about people that are under restraining orders by state courts. Now, maybe that's the amendment you're talking about, but we had a fellow at home in a small rural county driving down State Road 1, and he had a rifle in the back of his pickup truck up on a rack behind his head, like some people do, a lot of people do. And he was stopped for a taillight out or some innocuous thing. And the state policeman noticed he had a rifle. And he checked him out and found out that he was under a restraining order. Well, to shorten the story and make it palatable for this evening, he went to trial over that question. After he was convicted, he went to federal prison for 7 years. And, of course, just because you've got a restraining order against you doesn't mean that you've done anything. It just means that the court is being cautious. So there's no conviction there. But that's how out of hand things are, and that happens a lot.
Bond conditions.
Yeah, that's often in on the piece of paper where you're on bail or something, right?
Well, bond conditions, like here in Berry County, and I hear it's throughout the state, let's say you get a first offense drunk driver. You get the bond out, but they make bond conditions.
Yeah.
These are the conditions you have to abide to when you're out.
Yep.
And one of the conditions would be you have to go and take what's called a preliminary breath test. It's like a little mini breathalyzer that you have on the road.
Uh-huh.
You have to come in and take one every day or every other day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, wait a minute here. Isn't that an admission of guilt?
Uh-huh. No. Well, remember,
all these things are civil law. It has nothing to do with law. If an individual deserves to have their weapons taken away from them, the people have to decide that in a court of law, okay? And it can't be forever. Well, I guess it could be forever. I don't know. It depends on the case and what the people say. they make the decision. You know, a trial by jury, at the end of the day, the law is whatever they say it is. And if they feel that person should never have a weapon again, I would believe that they can do that. But certainly a government can't do it, and you can't make a law, you know, where you can, any kind of statutes, because statutes don't apply to people. Codes, statutes, regulations do not apply to people. They only apply to government officials, people who work for an agency, or an elected individual, appointed individual, or commercial activity, illegal commercial activity. You know, that's where all of these codes and statutes apply. But it doesn't apply to the people. And if there's a restraining order against somebody for something, just because they have weapons, there's no reason, there's no authority for them to take their weapons away, unless they use the weapon maybe to threaten the person. But nevertheless, they still have to take them into a court of law where the people need to decide, not a person that is elected or paid an individual like a judge. Okay, he's a political animal. He cannot make those decisions against an individual. They don't have that authority, whether it's on a federal level or the local level, town or county. But the people have to do it in a court of law. That's where it's got to happen. And that would be a very rare situation. Just to write a statute, if you violate this, that, and the other thing, we're also going to do this, that, and the other thing to you. That should never apply. We need to fix that problem. And again, we can't fix that problem until we fix the courts. Mm-hmm. And we can't fix the courts until we get to the other side, when this deep state is removed out of the way, and the void of authority and power and jurisdiction is open, and the people must fill it. And that's why people must get educated to fill those positions that the people should be taking in order to have government by consent.
Yeah, another thing I argue too is jurisdiction. Like when they come out with a Brady bill and they want to do all this gun banning and ordering sheriffs and all that, and you know, kudos to Sheriff Mack for fighting that and winning, but it, for some reason, like domestic violence, they got it at the federal level. If you get the misdemeanor offense of domestic violence, you lost your right to keep and bear arms. I'm sitting there go, first of all, since when is domestic violence a federal issue? And you're saying, well, that's not, but the Second Amendment is. And that's one of our regulations on it. And if you get caught, it's a felony.
Well, you make an excellent point again. And it's not like this is rocket science. We're just guys sitting around here this evening discussing it and saying, well, no, that violates the Constitution. It goes beyond what the Constitution restrains government from doing. And I have to agree with you. Of course, the question for sheriffs is, and by the way, I see more and more, I'm thankful in this way for this coronavirus scare, because it has brought us back to thinking seriously about where the power really is. And I do see that what old Tip O'Neill, a left-wing wacko that he was otherwise, he knew how to talk to people and get their votes, and he'd tell them, he's famous for saying, all politics is local. Well, I stretch a little further and I say all government's local too. All government is local. And that means let's get it down to the level of the county. There's a fellow wrote a book, been a number of decades ago. He wrote a lot of books. His name was John Rosas Rush Duty. And he was, his mother and father fled Asia Minor because the Islamic Turks were trying to eliminate his people entirely. And well, they killed about a million of them, I think. Well, his mother was pregnant with him, and they fled to the United States and wound up in the valley, the Central Valley of California. A lot of them still live there. A lot of them do. I'm trying to think of the name of that town. I think it was made famous by that Creedence Clearwater song, Lodi. Yeah, Lodi. Stuck in Lodi again. And a lot of them live there. He moved up to Angel's Camp. He passed away here a couple of years ago. His son has kind of taken over. He wrote a book. He wrote a lot of books, but he wrote a book called The Nature of the American System. He ended up being a Presbyterian missionary to an obscure Indian tribe in Nevada. And while he was there, that was back in the 1940s, couldn't go anywhere. Nobody lived. And he ended up doing a lot of reading, and he got himself good and educated. He wrote a book called Trying to Understand America. He wrote a book called The Nature of the American System. It's a paperback. It's a pretty quick read, but he gets right to the bottom of what happened in America real quick. As an outsider, well, a cultural outsider, he's an American. He was born here. His mother was pregnant when she came here. But he, a Christian man, pastored a few churches, missionary then for a while, and then he went to writing books. He wrote this book called The Nature of the American System, and what he concluded was this, that government in America, fundamentally, from the very beginning, clear up through that terrible war between the northern and southern tiers of the states, was the county. That was government in America. And everything that was done at the county level. Not some things, nearly everything. Then it'd go up, of course, there was the sovereignty of the states. But he uses a lot of examples to show that. For instance, when Mississippi was as radical as about leaving the Union as was South Carolina, when they went to do it, they voted by counties. And the very county that the future president of the Confederacy lived in voted not to leave the Union. And a lot of other counties in the South voted that too, of course. The counties, other counties, more other of other counties voted too. But it came down to county vote, not just a mass vote of people all over the state. No, they weighed in by counties. Well, that was just one example. There were many others, but that was his conclusion. And I, after reading the book, I need to go read that book again. It was the best book he wrote. He wrote a lot of books that were good. The most famous one is the called Biblical Law, a two-volume set. But that little paperback hit me harder, and I read all of his books. He also wrote the Messianic Nature of American Education, where he proves, to my understanding anyway, that education in America was designed to take the place of the Messiah himself, public education. That was the new Messiah, and he goes through the history of it. But the county is the key to all this madness, and that being true, the highest officer in the county is the sheriff. Now, the sheriff, of course, has to approach his job with, as the Bible says, trembling and fear, with humility, but knowing also that his responsibility is great. Well, all of our responsibilities are great. We have a duty to stand for what's right no matter what. The sheriff has such a duty as well, regardless of what some governor gone mad has said. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I just want to bring this up again and talk about the importance of the county and the importance of the office of sheriff. Back to you, John or Dar, if whoever's got something to say.
Well, Dar, do you have anything else you want to bring up?
Oh, you were static. You say that again.
Anything else you want to bring up?
No, those are kind of the things I wanted to.
Let me ask you: Did you get a hold of the booklet yet? Did Robert give you a copy of the administrative handbook?
No.
Okay.
NLAs, you mean?
Yeah, we put together an administrative handbook for jury administrators, sheriffs, and coroners. We worked on it, and Brent here also worked on it with us, and as a matter of fact, he's working on an item or two that we have to add into that, but it doesn't affect what you want to do to go forward with, that there's enough in that booklet for you to go forward with what you want to do, but there are two other items we do want to get in there eventually, and I know Gerard's working on one of them, and Brent's working on the other one. And hopefully we'll have that done this week. Were you able to accomplish that work yet, Brent?
Yeah, matter of fact, I've got that done. And after we got it all typed out, I call it guidelines and checklist for grand jury. When a sheriff, let me be precise, impanels a grand jury, how he should do it, what he should look out for, and what he should be cautious about. And I've got it done. I've gone through about a third of it the second time and fleshed it out a little bit so it would read better and added some explanation, etc. And when I get that, I hope to have that done or finished up real quick, and I'll send copies to
Well, get me a copy first, and we'll go through it, and I'll talk with Gerard and maybe a few other people, and then we'll come together, and we'll conclude the whole booklet. Then we'll put that into the booklet, and we'll conclude it. And then we'll get a copy to others. Because, I, you know, sometimes we may have some errors here or there that we correct each other with, and we don't want to send that over to Sheriff Dar or anyone else yet until we really make sure that at least all of our T's are crossed and our I's dotted there. But the booklet that Dar has right now is sufficient enough for him to go forward with that, and and we could do we can get together what we discussed and make a plan on a next step for Sheriff. So.
Well, good news is I got other sheriffs that are waking up a little bit, and I think if I can get them this material, I think they'll be on board.
Who will be on board?
All right. Well, again, we should have that all. What was that?
Other sheriffs in Michigan here. I think I've got six or seven right now that I think are looking really strongly at it, because they're kind of like me. They're scratching their head when these governor comes out and gives these orders. And me, her orders are only good for her employees. And, we got this COVID running around, but there's so much misinformation on there. How can they, how can you, with a good conscience, start writing people tickets and making them pay fines and everything like that for violating the orders?
Well, exactly. And look, at the president took the lead on this. And I know today he was asked in a press conference to, one of his representatives, and he's been saying this, he said it himself, and he's been saying this for a long time. Yeah, we can put out things that we think people should do, but it's up to the people to decide what they want to do. And, if you want to wear a mask or you don't want to wear a mask, you can't force a person to wear a mask. You can't force them. You can't give them a ticket. You can't jail them or anything. Of course, there are governors trying to do that and to force things upon them. One of the other things we concluded when we were discussing this book, Brent brought up particularly, is because we saw a problem with the prosecutor addressing the jury, and Brent made it clear, and we're in agreement with this, that a prosecutor should never be involved in coming to the grand jury. You know, basically law enforcement finds the problems, what's going on, someone has broken the law, criminal activity, and then it seems that they bring it to the prosecutor, who then brings it to the jury. Well, they should be bringing it in my opinion, to the sheriff, and the sheriff should bring it to the jury. Brent also spoke about a process where the jury has an attorney where the prosecutor could also bring it to the attorney for the jury, and then that person could then deliver it to the jury for a decision in whether they're going to get an indictment or not. This will prevent a lot of really bad stuff from going on, because sometimes they hold back evidence that would clear the individual, and now they'd have to produce it to the sheriff or to this other attorney. And then be given to the grand jury for a decision making, sometimes charges shouldn't even be brought up because there's enough evidence to clear the person. Yet they do it anyway for numerous different reasons. So that's a problem that has to stop, and we have to change that whole thing. I know federal prosecutors didn't have the authority to call or address a grand jury until the 1970s. And so prior to that, they didn't have any kind of an authority. They didn't have any kind of a regulation, statute, or code, or anything that gave them the authority to call a grand jury and then produce the evidence before them. I don't know when in America. And maybe it's different in different states, of course, but I mean, I don't know where it all started, where prosecutors address the jury. That should not be. Basically, everything should go through the sheriff, in my opinion, and the sheriff can then take it and address the jury. People in the sheriff's office, should be trained on that, or an attorney. This is something we got to discuss and think about a little more. And different states, different counties may do different things, but we'll have to figure that out. We should have a uniform way of dealing with things. We have the opportunity to bring together, you know, what we find in history, you know, what we've discovered in common law, and what has worked in the past, and even have the opportunity and freedom and liberty, because we're free and independent, to even change things up a little bit to make it much better than what it was. But we need to set something forward across this land that is uniform. But of course, people are free to tweak it here and tweak it there, but we should all be basically running uniformly the same way. So you got anything else?
No, I'm all set.
All right, whenever you, why don't we get together in the next day or two just for a conversation with a few of us to discover where we're going to go next with some of the things you were thinking. And talk with Robert to get a copy of that book, or talk with Jen. Jen should have a... Jen, do you have a finished copy? Did we get you a finished copy yet?
Of the original or the one we're working on right now?
The one that you had sent, well, you had sent a lot of corrections, and I made all the corrections. We've got one that's, you know, we can still go through to look to see if there's still any corrections that still
right.
need to be made. But it's one that it's workable now that we can. I know Robert got a copy, so probably, Sheriff, you should get it from Robert. And when we get the final with a few other things that are missing that you don't really need right at this moment, it doesn't affect some of the things you're looking to do. But once we get those other couple items in there, then we'll give you the final on that.
Yeah, Robert needs adjustment with yours. There's quite a few changes in there, I think, on his version.
I'm sorry, said it again?
Robert has a lot of changes, I think, indicated in the one he sent me.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I'll talk with Robert. Is Robert on the call right now? If Robert's on the call, you know, talk to me tomorrow, Robert, and let me make sure you have the right book, the one that's close to the final enough to be able to go forward with. And we'll take it from there. All right, if we're done, Sheriff, we'll move on to other people. And like I said, let's talk in the next day or two.
All right, sounds good.
Get a hold of Robert, and Robert will work something out with Gerard, and we'll get together. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Okay, we're going to move on. Let's see. We got some people in the queue. Well, before we go to the queue, you want to try to cover a couple of questions first, Jan?
Sure. We have a number of questions tonight. First question is, what documents do I have to file, and where do I file them? To not consent to duality of citizenship so that I am considered only of being under common law.
Well, you live free, and that's it. I mean, look at, it's not anything that we have to change or do. It's what we have to change or do within the government because they're acting unlawfully. You know, they've come outside of common law. We got to bring them back inside of common law. So, you know, nobody needs to go file a paper and to make some kind of declaration of who they are, a man on the land, and if you have unalienable rights. That's already been done. It's done ultimately it was done in the Declaration of Independence. You know, and we have government by consent, and the pecking order is, God is the true lawmaker who has blessed us with liberty to have government by consent. So therefore, we have the unalienable right to write a constitution and with a Bill of Rights, and we've done so, and that's the law that they are under. We're above that because we are the authors of that law, and we can change that anytime we want. Not change the Constitution, of course, but whatever the legislators have written into law, we have the power, the authority to nullify it in a court. That is, the tribunal does, the petit jury. So they can nullify any legislative law at any time in a court of law. But we have to be free and independent thinkers, but we don't have to make a declaration to declare that we have unalienable rights. The fact that we're human beings, all men are created equal, Bottom line, there's nothing else to talk about. And we have these unalienable rights that are protected by the Constitution. We don't have constitutional rights. We have unalienable rights that are protected by the Constitution. All right, next question.
Okay, on Tuesday, a singular judge takes it upon herself to convict Roger Stone to prison. If it happens, can we file a habeas corpus? Roger doesn't think his health will hold out long enough for his appeal or for the president to pardon him. This is urgent. What needs to be done and how can I help?
Well, that's interesting. And Tuesday meaning tomorrow Tuesday, I presume, right?
That says tomorrow, Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of moving quickly. We would need someone who could write a paper, you know, as far as making a statement and doing an affidavit. If not him, someone close to him that he talks to that can write on his behalf as a next friend. Being that he's not in jail yet, he should do it himself. But someone would have to make contact with him, and he'd have to give us an affidavit, and we would then, put together a process of the habeas corpus for him and see where it goes. If he ends up in jail, if someone knows him that can talk with him and get the story and give it to us, we can do it. But we can't just go forward without an affidavit. Everything lawfully in to move a court starts with an affidavit of truth. And without an affidavit of truth, no court could move forward. So that's what's needed. So I just presume the person doesn't know him, so I don't know.
Okay. Next question. Is domestic violence a topic when I'm being yelled at and screamed at and a cast iron skillet in the other person's hand and I'm asleep?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that a topic? What can I do, I guess, is the question.
Is he talking about his wife or something? I don't know. I don't understand the question.
Well, apparently this person is being abused even while being asleep and threatened and wants to know what she might do.
Okay, and I presume it's her spouse that's doing this? We don't know?
It doesn't say, and it doesn't say whether it's male or female, so I can't help you there, John.
Well, they could go get an order of protection, and that person would have to leave the house, I would presume. I'm not sure. Maybe Brent can respond to that a little better.
The question is that domestic violence? Was that the question?
Well, yeah. Is domestic violence a topic? In other words, they feel they're being subjected, apparently, to domestic violence.
Well, consider... If somebody points a gun at you and says, I'm going to shoot you, is that an act of violence? Nobody's hurt yet. But the truth is, if you shoot him first, you really are innocent of murder. If words are combined with action to injure, then you are put in apprehension. You are put in apprehension of an immediate battery. You think it's coming, and any sane person would think it's coming. If somebody's standing over you with an iron skillet, and they're screaming at, and saying they're going to, wait a minute, if you're asleep, they wouldn't be screaming, you'd be woke up. But whatever the case, that's pretty serious. An iron skillet, if it doesn't knock an eye out, I knew a fella got hit with an iron skillet. His mother hit him with an iron skillet in the head and knocked his eye crooked. I knew another woman. Her sister hit her in the head with an iron skillet, and it knocked her eye crooked. You know, she'd look right at you, but you'd think she was looking at the fellow beside you. I remember her well. She went to church with us. I knew her whole family. Well, what I mean to say is that's an act of violence. If somebody is screaming like they're going to hit you, and they're wielding something they're going to hit you with, well, yeah, that's cause to... Well, here's what I'd do. Here's what I'd do if that really happened, male or female. That's what I thought, too. Good thing you brought that up. I mean, people assume that's a man abusing a woman. It could be the other way around, because there have been plenty of women hit men with iron skillets, too. But the thing to do is get out of there if that's the case. No, don't shoot him or her. No, that's murder. If you have a means of escape, you need to take it. That's what our common law has always said. Unless, of course, there is no means of escape. But even where the law wouldn't require you to take a means of escape, like in your own home, it might still be the best thing to do. Get out of the way if somebody's threatening you. You know, I have a friend, he's a lawyer, been a criminal defense lawyer for 50 years. And he tells people often, he taught his children this, avoid a fight at all costs. Because even if you win, you're going to lose. You're going to get injured, or you're going to go through the ringer of the courthouse. You avoid a fight at all costs. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means what the common law says. If there's a means of escape, the law requires you to take it before you fight. Well, that's important, because I know women that have murdered their husbands. Now, I don't know of any husbands that have murdered their wives when they were threatened in their own homes, but I know women that have murdered their husbands after the fight was over and there was a means of escape. And in both cases, it was with a 12-gauge shotgun. One of them was in Tennessee. It was a Church of Christ preacher. His wife shot him with a shotgun point blank while he was sleeping on his belly in his underwear on his bed, taking an afternoon nap. The other one was in my hometown, a shirt-tail cousin of mine. His wife shot him with a shotgun at point blank range while he sat in the easy chair at home for something he had said to her earlier that day. That's murder, friends, neighbors, and kin. By the way, in neither one of those cases were those women convicted of murder. There's a long story behind that that's lawless. But the point I'm making to you is, whoever you are, don't murder your spouse or whoever you're talking about, and find the means of escape and get out of there if that's really happening. Well, back to you, John.
Okay. All right, next question.
Okay, what is National Liberty Alliance doing in regards to putting together a national militia? Are we working with existing militias? Will we team up with other militias in order to protect people, property, and monuments?
Well, the plan that we're working out is really to restructure everything. Of course, there are existing militias, some regulated and some not. But, of course, we're looking at ultimately the unregulated militia, which really is everybody. Matter of fact, we're trying to move forward as we're organizing state leadership now and trying to get county leadership going, where people will come together, maybe get about at some point when they get about a half a dozen people together, that's the point when they can start to really start to put something together structurally as far as a plan. We have a plan that we put together that they can move in their county and resolutions, and they can add to those resolutions. But we need to get people on the county level involved in three different ways. We need everyone that comes together should participate with the militia. The other thing is really getting people to become committeemen. And the third, of course, and the most important part of it is really for the administrators to take back control of the jury system, because clearly judges and prosecutors are abusing them and involved in all kinds of RICO situations. So we need to take it away from them. We're trying to organize that across in every county. We got about 3,100 counties in America, and we need people to step up on the grassroots to start organizing these things. And when they start organizing these things and start taking control of the committeeman process, take control of the courts within their county, take control of getting people together and organized for the militia, and to get the sheriff involved with them. The sheriff should be involved in some of these meetings. If the sheriff can't make it, you can always send a deputy or someone, but a representative from the sheriff's office should at some point be involved. We have a plan on how to approach the sheriff, or shall I say we're working on one. But before approaching the sheriff, you first have to organize and get together some kind of a formal paper which you know, brings you together as the people and what your plan is, with resolutions. And the sheriff should participate with that. And also, if sheriff were to execute posse comitatus, he'd have a place to go to that he knows he can get more people if he needed to do that. So really, whoever that person is writing, asking that question, they should get a hold of Jan, and Jan will connect them with the district leader, and the district leader will connect them with whatever organizing we got going in that neighborhood, in that area for the states. We broke the nation up into 10 districts. So there's each district leader's got maybe 3 to 8 states, depending on where it's located at. And we also broke it up within the time zones, so it's convenient for the people involved. They're all in the same time zones. Get in touch with them. Matter of fact, on our website, we have this all laid out. Let's see. If you go to People's Duty, we have Organizing Your County right here. But you need to connect with the district coordinators, who, because we're going to put together anybody who calls up from your county or from your state, depending on if you're a state coordinator or a county organizer. But in your county, people want to get involved. We'll connect them with the people already in that county doing things. But organizing, we have a plan of organizing right here. Organizing your county, putting together all of the necessary things and planning together, and then eventually approaching the sheriff to get the sheriff involved, and that's it. So we have a meeting protocol. We have, you know, how to do the first meeting, the ideas, organizing. We're organizing. Organizing begins with two people having coffee from time to time, discussing these things and or whatever, and eventually becomes 3, 4, 5, or 6. The idea is to get about 6 people involved, and then at that point, you know, plan a meeting in the county somewhere, centrally located in the county, plan a meeting, and invite people from whatever liberty groups or gun groups, you know, that are in the area. There's all kinds of different groups, liberty groups, that you can contact and invite to this, and we're putting together a presentation. Matter of fact, that reminds me of something, another call out for anybody who is good working with. We did have some people volunteered for this, but I don't know whatever happened. But we need people to help us to put together some videos and PowerPoint videos. So we need people who know how to do PowerPoints, create the PowerPoints, put it together, and put the voice to it, and then create a video out of it. So anybody who has that kind of a knowledge and would like to work with us, we need to do PowerPoint videos for the orientation for the juries, which maybe 2 PowerPoints. And then we need to do PowerPoints also for introducing our plan to the people in the county, you know, when they come to that meeting. But anyway, we have a lot of different things. We have venue ideas where to have the meetings: library, town hall, private club, back room of a bar, restaurant, or a diner. Okay. Also, there should be an online venue for the county. You know, we've got all this written up here on this page, and of course, you know, people can come to our open forum here and ask questions to get more details. You know, we how to have your first official meeting, meeting protocol, subject matter. You know, what should be discussed and focused in on, talking about committee man, jury administration, common law, equity, grand jury, petty jury, militia, republic review, which is something that we really all need to learn about and get involved with in every county, founding documents, American heritage, and again, we're writing a plan how to approach your sheriff and organize for posse comitatus. We do have some PowerPoints here and videos that could be showed at the county meeting that are pertinent. Introduction to National Liberty Alliance, Action at Law, Recapping the Record, David Barton, One Nation Under God, Pathway to Liberty, the Forefathers Monument, Hugh's Plan to Save the World, Trump's Inauguration Speech. These are all good things to bring into the meeting and discuss and learn and know about. educating, coming to National Liberty Alliance, getting an education, taking our courses. And again, everything you need to do to organize is right under people's duty, right here, organizing your county. Everybody should register to vote. If you haven't been registered to vote, you can do it here. Becoming a committeeman, how to become a committeeman. And the committeeman petition process, we have information on that. We even put together committeeman proposed party rules, which we spent years working with and studying the committeeman process and seeing how things work and looking into the way everything is laid out in the statutes for this process for becoming being elected as a committeeman. And when you become elected as a committeeman, the rules they have there are there to empower one individual or a small group of individuals who ultimately empower another individual all the way up to the national level. That needs to be, you know, done away with. We have to empower the people on the grassroots level. We have to empower everyone. And the party rules that we wrote up empower the people on the grassroots level. You know, they are the people that need to decide what needs to be done within their counties. If you want to learn about the Republic Review, okay, again, very important thing, this Republic Review. You can click on that page and watch. We got some videos on that, and we have a bullet point information on that also. Underneath that, let's see, we got the militia registration we want to put together. We don't want people to register with us. We want people to register with themselves in the county, you know, and register themselves. We have to think about that, probably with the sheriff, of course. But with their own group, within their own group, they should be registered and prepared and ready to assist in anything that might be necessary for that. Militia members in your county, militia rules for the several states. That's a booklet that you can get. Well, actually, we put together, I think. Let's see what we did here. I don't remember on that. There is a booklet that Brent wrote on the militia, but here is some information. Oh, yeah, we did a paper for a preamble for the militia. This is, again, getting back into uniformity across the nation. Every county should pretty much do things in a uniform way, but, of course, every county is unique with their own problems and situations. So you add to what you need to add to. If you have to tweak something a little, you tweak it. Again, the people have to take control and start thinking free, being free, and acting free. They have to be resolved. And we wrote some resolutions in here being resolved that we, the people of these several states, recognize and declare that our United States Constitution is an affirmation of our state's common law militia. And so there are resolutions we put together, again, that should be uniform across the nation for the militia. So, again, you find this all under the people's duty. Anybody interested in looking for a full-time job, a rewarding job, a professional job, become a jury administrator, click on that tab. We have a tab that takes us to the county sheriff, which is a page specially put together for the county sheriff with videos and different information, the power of the county sheriff. So we've got a lot of information on that. And then, of course, everyone involved should be on our website being educated, coming to understand how to have government by consent. So you take our courses. We have a free civics course. We have the free we're not doing a constitutional course no more because that's inside the government by consent course. But we have a free militia course. We have the government by consent course. And anybody who wants a certificate of completion, when you complete that, you can request a certificate of completion. I think we charge a $20 donation on that. And then we have a further education into our founding documents, essays and lectures, political information, and how to petition, Robert's Rules. I mean, just so much information, your books that people can look into and read and get a further education. Amongst that, we have the 5,000-year leap, which that we have that in audio and written that could be downloaded right on our site. Essays and lectures, probably one of the most important ones is Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner. You can download right here on that education. Again, let's see, right here it's, if I can get it, essays and lectures, down to Trial by Jury. If you go to Trial by Jury essay, we have that in audio and in written. You can click on the PDF tab. It opens up. You can read along, and you can listen in as you read along of Trial by Jury. a very, very important essay that people should be looking into. Matter of fact, I'm going to go redo this one. I had done it once some years back when we found this. But again, people want to organize, come out to nationallibertyalliance.org. Under the People's Duty tab is everything you need to know. Get to our meetings, get to your educational needs, organize, connect with your sheriff, and support the sheriff, and the sheriff should be supporting you. And that's how we have government by consent. If everybody in every county, we only need a few people in every county. You know, if you get a couple hundred people in every county, we take back America. And, you know, this is how we have government by consent. Government by consent requires an education. And so we have to spend our time to do that. Next question. Is that the last, Jan?
I have another one here for you, John.
All right.
I received a notice of assessment from the Kansas Department of Revenue informing me that I owed income tax for the year 2015. They stated that I had $50,572 federal adjusted gross income in 2015. I did not have an income of $50,572 in 2015. I have not been filing for some time now, and I did not receive any documents about a 1099-C or any fund from HSBC. I received disability monthly since 2010 of $1,374 each month during 2015, the only income I had. The document they sent me showed a 1099-C in the amount of $33,352 from HSBC Bank USA National Association, which I have no knowledge of nor ever received any 1099-C from. HSBC was the mortgage company that foreclosed on our home. The adjusted summary tax for 2015 had two forms, a 1099-C for $33,352 and an IRS form SSA 1099 for $17,746 for disability. Questions: what is the best way to go about handling this? Who do I communicate with concerning the 1099-C and SSA 1099? And what forms do you have that I might use to fight this?
Yeah, the IRS is a major problem that hopefully will be gone soon. Jan, you might want to mute yourself while I'm talking. I have the same problem. It seems that I bleed over also. In fact, next week I'm going to probably go to a headset again. But in any event, look, the IRS is evil. I think they're going to be gone soon because Trump has taken over the whole process, and he's creating another a real economy alongside this monopoly economy that we have going here now. He's taken over the Federal Reserve as far as making decisions and so on and so forth, and he's going to get rid of the Federal Reserve. I'm not sure how he's going to set it up, but he's going to get rid of what's existing today. The Federal Reserve, which is a private bank, and the IRS, which the IRS has no authority to be doing anything. As a matter of fact, they just showed up in the mid-70s. They showed up as an agency prior to, without congressional approval or anything. They just showed up as a on the list. You go back into the 60s, they didn't exist back then. Even though they may have been operating, they were not on that list. But fighting the IRS is tough. It took me a lot of years to really understand, because I've been fighting them for over 20 years. And each step of the way, by God's mercy, I've just been in head of the game. Now I understand exactly. After all the experience I've had, I've been in court with these people, numerous cases and different things. And I finally understand their weakness, their Achilles heel. I've always framed away from trying to teach it because they'll make you a target and come out after you for that. But I think what we may do
is, you know, we're doing habeas corpuses. We're doing non-judicial foreclosures. The most evil of all of them is the family court, and we're doing family court. And the second most evil is the IRS. Even though they're much more destructive in certain ways, but you know, the IRS, that is, to, you know, in many ways, but you know, the family court destroys children, and so I think they're the most evil. But look at, they're evil. Maybe we'll put something together where you can petition the grand jury, and the grand jury can do an amicus curiae on your behalf, and we'll make that available to other people. Instead of teaching the process, we can exercise the process through an amicus curiae. And I don't know what you would call it. Brent, could you call it an amicus curiae if you're just sending a paper on the behalf of an individual through, let's say, the grand jury here, to the agency that is abusing the person? Or would that be called something else? Could you call it an amicus curiae?
Well, you know, that wouldn't be what they would... Amicus curiae only applies in appellate courts.
It's a friend of the court, friend of the defendant or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, by permission of the court. They don't want to allow it. They want.
Well, that's for them, not for us.
Yeah.
We don't care about
that. So it wouldn't apply. No, they don't use those terms in bureaucracy that I've ever, administrative law that I've ever seen. You can call it what you want, but there are no court, come to think of it.
Right, they're not.
Yeah, and the administrative courts aren't courts. They're just, well, they're kangaroo courts.
Yeah, but they use those administrative courts and actually put people in jail for 6 years, usually, is what they like to do.
Terrible.
You know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I have found a lot of the tricks. I don't know that I found all of them, but I found the ones that really upset them that people, they don't want people to know. And, maybe I'll have to think about how we'll approach that. If you're in the court, we can do an amicus curiae. We don't care about requesting or asking permission for anything. They need to ask us for permission. That's my attitude, and that should be the people's attitude. And because, after all, we are the lawmakers. Of course, God ultimately, like I said, is the lawmaker of the natural law, but he gave us the power and the authority, unalienable right, to have government by consent. Once we placed ourselves with a covenant, which is the Declaration of Independence, is a covenant between us and God, to go forward and live under His law, and also receive the blessings of liberty, and that's clearly defined in the Declaration of Independence and the preamble of the Constitution. One of the government's jobs is to secure the blessings of liberty. But we certainly have to be blessed with that liberty, and that means we must acknowledge God. If we don't acknowledge God, we're not going to be blessed with that liberty. Of course, that's why here at NLA we start our meetings off with a focus on God and read a Bible verse, you know, a couple, usually a chapter. But you know what? Anybody that has an IRS problem, you know, get in touch with Jim just to get you on a list. And I'll see if we can't work out a paper, two papers. If you're in court, we'll do it as an amicus curiae. If it's just going through the, and it's an administrative court that they call a court of record. It's a big joke. If you read USC 26, and I haven't read through all of it, it's like thousands of pages. I think it's like 9,000 pages. It's ridiculous, and it doesn't even, most of it doesn't make sense. But they really bury a lot of things in, you know, going here to there. It's, you know, it's really, you know, construction of law, unlawful law, actually. But anyway, we'll maybe put something together for, dealing with the IRS from the grand jury's perspective on the behalf of the individual requesting it. Or if they're already in the court system, which claims to be a common law court, which we have a lot more we can say about that, we can do something else and maybe work that into a habeas corpus. Because once they seize control of you, they don't let go, and you have to go to court. But they'll come out and get you if you don't. So a habeas corpus might be the way to go if an individual is already in the court system. Starting off maybe with an amicus curiae first and then move into a habeas corpus. You know, so let me see if I could put some papers together on that, and people can call up, you know, Jim. It's
Goodness, what is it? intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Just give you basic information, your name and phone number and email address to Jim, and we'll put you on that list. And when we get some paperwork together, we'll contact you and we'll see what we do. But I think we could do something with that. And I think that's the best way to go. I couldn't teach people these things for number of reasons. Number one, it'll take a lot of time. It's an education in itself. Number two, I'd become a target. And number three, you really got to be good at this. You really got to know what to do, what to say, and when to say it, and how to say it to some degree. Because really, you're signaling to the judge certain things, and they get a little nervous when they understand that you understand. So we'll see how that can go. Huh?
To the caller from Kansas, please go to commonlawyer.com and go to the contact page and email me with your phone number.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? We got to move over to other people. We got people in the queue.
I have a short one for you to finish up, John.
Is this the last one?
Yep, it's the last one.
Okay, shorty. I'll try to keep it a shorty.
Okay. I wanted to ask about the Sescu account. Version of retired federal Judge Dale and his Puerto Rican cash out method. Has anybody done this? And if not, would you all that's listening follow me via film documentary on the journey to find the truth of the cash out via Puerto Rico?
Judge Dale is a trap. Stay away.
Yep.
I've already read through his system. I see what he's doing. And he's a trap. Stay away.
So end us the questions.
Okay. All right. Let's take our first caller here. We have Deb. Where are you from, Deb? What state are you from, Deb? You got the mic.
Yes. Hello. Unmuted. You may remember me from last week and my large amount of money that I'm holding the county accountable for the violation of their constitutional oaths. I have several points to this question. First off, in the suit against me, it's statutes and ordinances that they say I and my dogs violated. And I can prove, I have definite proof that the people who called the sheriff against me were lying. The state's attorney would not allow any testimony in the court case concerning the lying, which, again...
Let me ask you a question. You're saying that the sheriff came out applying these statutes and ordinances?
Well, a deputy...
Code violations?
Yes, a deputy came out and wrote several citations. They built a subdivision next to my farm, and these people don't like my animals.
Yeah, I remember. Well, let me ask you a question or two here. Have you been down to speak to the sheriff about this?
And that's where I'm going.
If you're going to go down there, one of the things you want to try to make clear to him is talk to him about the fact is why is he executing codes and ordinances? He's supposed to be a law enforcer, not a code enforcement officer.
That's
where you begin.
Where the money is.
And you got if you have a sheriff that's in the game, then you got a problem. The next step, look at it. I've come to the end of my ropes here in my town. I had a situation with my vehicle and I couldn't get it. I just got put into a box. I couldn't get it registered until I got it. Inspected. And I couldn't get it inspected without taking it onto the road and driving it for maybe 100 miles or so to kick off the codes that were inside the computer that was erased. And in that process, I got a couple of tickets, and they didn't care that I'm trying to get this thing. I can't get it registered, and I can't do anything with it until I get it going. I had plates, I had insurance, and everything else. Just that the registration had expired while I was trying to get my inspection done. So put me in a situation
And I decided, well, I'm just not going to pay them these tickets. I'm done. I'm challenging their jurisdiction. So you can challenge the jurisdiction, but you have to learn how to do that. Have you been taking our courses?
I'm doing all this on my own, and I am way in over my head. I'm farming by myself, and I have no time. I will eventually get to the courses, but I've got to get this off my plate.
Without an education, you can't really fix the problem because you have to go in, challenge jurisdiction. Look, we learned through the School of Hard Knocks. I mean, we used to go into the courts with people and challenge jurisdiction and do different things. We find ourselves back the next month and the next month and the next month. Somebody's for a year going back and forth to the court, you know, and we realized through that, wait a second, what are we doing? You know, and we realize, well, let's move it for cause. And so I only give them one chance at it. Well, I move it for cause. Once I move it for cause, you know, now I'm looking for injuries. You know, they've injured me. I need to be restored, and damages have to be paid. And that's where you can go with this. And you can get that really executed through the federal court because it's a violation. You're going to rest it on a couple of things. First of all, you're going to rest it on denial of due process, hijacking you into jurisdictions unknown, things of that nature. And you need to be able to understand those things, how to write the paper, how to deal with it in the court. You have to be polite. You have to move it along, but you have to be clear, precise. And, you know, I'll have a paper in my back pocket when I go talk to the judge. I'll talk with the prosecutor first. They actually have a prosecutor now. I don't know how they do it in other places, but here in this county, in this town, they have a prosecutor actually for these traffic violations and different things. So you get to talk with that person first and then the judge. But I'll have in my back pocket the moving for cause to the federal court if they don't throw my case out. I'll serve it right there and then. And then take it into federal court for violating my right of due process and trying to transfer me into jurisdictions unknown and a couple of other things that are constitutional issues. It's got to be a constitutional issue to move it into federal court. You're not going to go in there on the details of the problem. You're going in there on the law, the fact that they're denying you your due process. They can't take you into a court of law because a court of law won't apply these codes and things to you. That's why it's dealt with in a lot of these town courts and village courts and city courts. But they won't go into a county court, although I think some places they have entered it into, they've taken that next step. But generally, they won't go into a county court, and they definitely won't go into the state court with these issues. But you have to learn how to do these things. We do have, if you go up to our website, you know, you should be taking the course because you've got to get a background. You've got to get a framework, and that's what these courses will give you.
I have like 4 days.
Huh?
I have 4 days.
That's the problem. You know, and people don't really think about these things until they get into problems and they realize how corrupt things are. We're trying to get people ahead of the game. They should start to realize these courts are corrupt, and one day you're going to be pulled into them if you can't. Well, hopefully that's going to change soon. But anyway, right now they're corrupt. What we do have here, but, you know, you can get yourself in trouble here if you don't understand what you're doing and how you're doing it. We do have a page here. I think it's under education, court forms right here, court forms, processes, and instructions. Okay, but you should have a framework to work with all this stuff. You should understand how the system works. You should understand how the process of the court goes and how to write a paper. Although you'll get a lot of that here, but you need, again, framework. But here, instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction, that's where you start. And then I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. The judge is going to say, okay, I decided I have jurisdiction. And your next step has to be, well, judge, I think you have to recuse yourself because, first of all, you're already biased. You believed before it was even asked. You believe you have jurisdiction, number one. Number two, you only have my paper. Where's the prosecutor's paper making his position and you know, rebutting what I had to say? Nobody's rebutted it. And so that prosecutor's got to come in and rebut it, and he didn't rebut it. And you made the decision. And if you made the decision, you should have made the decision on what's before the court. My paper is the only paper before the court. Sworn affidavit lays out everything,
and you didn't go that route, so therefore you're biased, you have to recuse yourself. And besides that, once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. The word decided means it has to go before a hearing, a court. It has to be decided. And that didn't happen either, because they didn't go through the process. So you see, that's the next step you got to go through. And then they're going to push you beyond that. Then you know you got to get out of that court, because the next time you come, they're going to beat you up bad. So you need to get out of that court. So you have to have a paper in your back pocket, so to speak, or after you leave, file a paper, serve it on the judge and the prosecutor, and if there's anyone else involved. But usually those are the only two individuals. You're going after them and suing them for violating your unable rights of due process, you know, violation, and other things.
It is, you know, the county court.
It is the county court, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, like I said, so what state are you in?
Illinois.
Yeah, some states have gone into taking it into the courts where the courts of record are supposed to be, and in some states I wonder if courts of record ever were there, you know. But in any event, it's the same thing. Court is operating under a jurisdiction. You know, courts have different jurisdictions. It could be in equity, it could be common law, it could be traffic, it could be commercial. Well, and traffic and commercial is equity anyway. So it's equity or law. And equity doesn't apply to you, only law does. They don't understand that. They've been taught something different. So, again, you have to...
So I need to file the show cause jurisdiction?
You have to move your case to federal court for cause. The cause means a constitutional cause, okay? You know, so, you know, again, you take, let's see, you go, wish I could move through these things quicker. Let's go to founding documents. Okay, you go to the Constitution, and again, this is in the papers. I just showed you the page. These papers are kind of written up. But you have to know how to work those papers, how to apply those papers. When the judge does something, you have to be able to respond to that judge. And then you have to move it to the next step. You have to be bold enough to be able to challenge the judge, but you have to do it in a polite way. You know, if you can signal the judge with certain words in certain ways. These judges don't even know they're being signaled anyway. The federal judges know, but these other judges, most of them have no idea. They don't have a clue. But the Constitution is clear in that it's in Article 2, I think. I don't know, 3, I mean. The jurisdiction here. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. That's the key. Okay? You can't go into the court and argue the problem, okay? You can go into the court and argue the fact that you're not getting due process. You see, and once then you can ask for the court to move that other court to cease and desist, okay? And you can get injuries, compensated for injuries in the federal court, but you have to put that in your wherefore clause. For violating your right of due process and any other
How do I contact the federal court and get this? I don't even...
Again, this is going to be too big for you. I mean, it's... you're not going to be able to... What are they asking for? What are they trying to do now? What are they trying to say? What are they trying to force you to do?
Okay, the county court, I have an appeal now, and I'm trying to answer their rebuttal of my appeal.
What are they trying to take from you or do to you? They're telling you
they fined me almost $3,000. They wanted me to do 300 hours of community service.
For what?
For what?
Yeah.
Because what actually happened was these people in the subdivision saw me go to the grocery. They came over, unlocked the... gate to my dogs, let them loose. They had found a cat that had drowned in a culvert, and they called the cops and said my dogs killed the cat. It's very easy to prove that my dogs did not kill the cat.
Okay, well, look at here. Let me. Whoa. Listen. Did is there an affidavit in there
that some witness has made to say, I saw that dog kill that cat?
Yes.
They do have that. An affidavit form sworn before a notary.
Well, no, it was never sworn.
No, it's just statements on a paper.
To the deputy.
Well, look, you need to move the fact that there is no affidavit in the court, no sworn affidavit, therefore there are no charges against me. There's no witness against me. Anything that is not sworn to is hearsay. It means nothing.
What?
If they're not willing to swear to it, huh?
Oh, they will. They're so dumb.
Well, you could try to go in that route. You know, you may get surprised. Because when people now realize that they're going to go and make a sworn affidavit on what they're claiming, now they're going to swear to it, and that puts them into a whole different situation. If they're caught lying, they can pay a heavy penalty for that. But that's where I would start. I would move the court to dismiss because there's no sworn affidavit, and there is no case without a sworn affidavit.
They were willing to testify in court, but the state's attorney would not even allow them to testify about the cat because he knew they were lying.
Mm.
And what my actual question is, the sheriff will not take my report stating that I know these people have lied on a report to the sheriff. He says, well, there's just nothing we can do if somebody chooses to lie to us.
Well, you know, the other thing you could do is you need to, and again, it seems like it's far into the case, but look, you need to write an affidavit and make it clear in there that you're innocent and put your statements and everything else and put it into the court. And then when they go to make a decision against you and nobody has rebutted that affidavit, well, you say, I object, Your Honor. What are you talking about? You know, we have an affidavit before the court that's unrebutted, and an unrebutted application rules this court. You have to rule according to what I said, because I swore to it, and nobody rebutted it. You see, and they don't, these, I see all the time they don't rebut affidavits, or they may rebut some of it, but not all of it. You got to go through your affidavit and look at the points that they made an argument against, and you see, well, they didn't rebut this, they didn't rebut that, and you can pull those together and push maybe for a summary judgment if you have enough, because now they didn't rebut these truths, and without these truths being rebutted, case dismissed, summary judgment, I'm out of here. Again, there's
a
lot for you to learn.
Is there an affidavit, or do I just write it out?
You write out your affidavit on a paper very clearly and very simply, just the facts. Let me repeat that. Just the facts. Don't obloviate. Don't get involved in storytelling. The facts. And then you take it before a notary, and you have it notarized. And then you serve it on the other side and file it with the court and see where it goes. And when that judge goes and makes a decision on that court case and that affidavit has not been rebutted, your affidavit rules the court. After all, they don't have an affidavit on their side. They just have hearsay on a statement. It's meaningless. They do it all the time. That's how ignorant we are to the law. The most simplest things, and we're that ignorant. I mean,
yes.
I had to learn this, you know.
Yes.
We should have been taught this in school.
Yes.
And National Liberty Alliance is going to really, that's one of the things we are going to do is move this education into our schools from first grade to 12th grade, the whole gamut. But anyway.
Is there anybody I can go to get these people charged for falsely charging me?
Again, you know, someone has to spend time to look at your case, read everything. If you get a lawyer to do it, very few lawyers will take the positions that you're trying to get, number one. What you may have to do is pay the fine and sue them. But in order to sue them, you need to get an education. You don't have the time, obviously, 4 days to get an education.
Okay. So what I need to do is write my affidavit and put it into my rebuttal of the appeal.
That's where I would start, and I would start studying right now, even though you don't have enough time to study, at least you begin studying, because you may be able to do something else 3 months down the line after they continue to abuse you. Yeah, go ahead.
You were saying something, Deb? Did we lose you? I don't hear you no more. Does anyone hear Deb? It looks like I'm still connected. I see the... Can anyone hear me? Francine, Jan?
I can hear you, John. I hear you fine.
Okay, Deb, I think we lost Deb. I don't hear her. I see her, but I don't hear her. All right, we're going to have to move on anyway. We've got a lot of the callers. But look, at get your education. Hopefully you're still hearing. Get your education. File your affidavit. Start pursuing that and see where it goes. Again, you may end up being beat up, but continue your education. Go back and sue them for more. You know. So, okay, we're going to have to take our next caller. Goodness, we only got about, 20, 25 minutes. We've got a few people. Well, we've got quite a few people in the queue, so let's I'm going to try to keep it short and move on so we can get all, you know, get a little bit from everybody. Dan, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Greetings to everyone. I thought tonight was, I must say, very interesting and informative, too, and just a minute or two, where some of these people like myself might have to go before the county attorney or actually the county manager and assess things like it is, that there is a certain amount of charges that they've got or debits or something concerning taxes on certain years and stuff. Some of which are totally a fraudulent partial number, and that they created. And I'll just say that this particular partial number that has to do with this property here has ended in 13, and been for right on back when my father was living. They come up and created a 13, I won't tell you the prefixes, but at the end, 01. I complained about this, and this has been going on now for, right good many years. And there is no question about it that I've done something close to a tax audit. With that said, and too for the benefit of others, not just me, what would you suggest there, because the county manager actually called me today. I've been waiting for this. He's about 3 weeks ago he called me and for this meeting. And the truth of the matter is that we're going to discuss some other situations about a fraudulent POA. I won't get into that. You've heard this before concerning how a party in my family did this against my mother. And again, this same information has to do with unlawful innuendos of ledgers of a certain amount of taxes. And at some point back in time, they put me through threats, duress, and coercion at the tune of around $35,000. If I hadn't come up with those kind of reserve notes, my mother's home would have been gone to my brother. He would have went in there and stole the whole homestead and everything. So those are sort of some things you've heard in the past. And I heard tonight, with that said, what was also said about the violation of the taking clause, and that sheriff was really, really appreciated his comments, and the violation of the taking clause, which is the Fifth Amendment. What would you suggest that I possibly focus, even with the fact that I'm going to have documents like a forensic tax audit in my hands showing fraud? What would you think would be a good idea for me to continue with?
Well, you know, look, at any time dealing with any local court, even a state court, I would move it to federal court for cause, because they're operating in civil law, traffic law, you know, all kinds of different, you know, jurisdictions that have nothing to do with me and clearly have nothing to do with you either. The taxes, is this property taxes, right?
Yes, sir. And yeah. I've had a banker even to come. They're waiting for some of these illegal, so-called back in time purported deeds that my brother did, and he used that POA. You remember this?
Yeah. So you know, look, what I would do if I were you is move, get it out of the court. Just get it out of there. And the only way you can get it out of the court is to move it to federal court, of course.
Well, I'm hoping I don't have to do that because I will tell you this. They're going to see, that is the county, where there is a transcript, and it shows that my brother was caught in, and it's registered. He can't get out of it. It's registered in the Register of Deeds. So quickly, for the benefit of other people here,
You're in court. You're coming into court fighting someone else. It's not that you're fighting the town or some government agency, right?
Right. Well, what it is, I'm going to have a meeting with the county, and they're going to see that the documents that they have upheld, even including the creation of a new partial number that I didn't, no joinder in law with me, I've never subdivided this property. So the creation of 1381, they going to see that that came about when they come and put some type of creation of this third party. That property might belong to them, to that third party that is totally bogus, void.
Is it a criminal act?
I think it is. I think it's, you know, from what I've researched, that the clerks cannot do those kind of knowing ahead of time that what they put in the public
record. If you're able to create a case, given the sources of your facts, okay, proving your facts, that why don't you take it and do a criminal complaint with the sheriff and bring it into the court?
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to try to behoove.
Thing I could suggest to you in your case.
Criminal prosecution.
Right.
They're going to see these documents, which are I've got certified. They're certified as if I was to go to Supreme Court, right out of the Register of Deeds. It's showing my brother's caught and in fabricating the POA. And real quickly, you've heard this so many times.
Well, have you brought it before the court, and the court has looked at it, and have they ignored it, or what?
That's just it. We have attempted 2 or 3 times in our probate, and they're so crooked up here and will not abide by procedure that's laid out by North Carolina General Assembly, and I've got all the documents there that show that they have clearly violated for about 15 years. I'll just say this in close. In 2005, the last part of February, I was subjected to this unlawful foreclosure that my brother orchestrated. He was the sole, they used him, he was the sole estate witness. He had nothing to do with the property. He wasn't even in my mother's will about the property. And he clearly has been trying to steal this property and filing former fraudulent documents up there in my father's probate. So it's been a situation that this thing is coming to the head, and I now have to research.
Dan,
go ahead.
This is what you need to do, Logan. You need to put your position, everything you got, into an affidavit, a written affidavit, and file it in the court. That has to be rebutted. Remember, that's the key thing. And if someone does rebut some of it, but not all of it, the parts that they don't rebut, maybe enough evidence to be able to have a summary judgment done right away because they didn't rebut it. Okay. And the other thing, of course, is taking that affidavit and filing a criminal complaint. I would take it to the sheriff for that criminal complaint filing to get a criminal action going at the same time. So those are the two things you could do. But with that, I got to move on.
I really have that intent of going through the county manager and bringing the law enforcement in. And, yes, I've been preparing an affidavit. We better come up that's great advice, I believe. We've got other people, and it's 11:47.
Okay, then. I think you can maybe get some success with that, doing those two things. That's an important...
I think that'll benefit a lot of other people. Okay, let's break for the other people now.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
Anthony from West Virginia, I guess.
Hey, is that you?
Anthony, John. 304 area code, you got the mic.
West Virginia, Anthony, can you hear me all right? Can you hear me?
You're dead. You're going to have to get up closer to your mic or something. I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, I'm on speakerphone. I was plugged into my PA system listening to you. My mic apparently doesn't work. Can you hear me now?
Yep, you're getting a lot better. Go ahead.
Oh, great, good. I have a question. By the way, that was me asking the question about the militia. One piece of business that we can do, you know that I was very instrumental in getting all of the counties constituted here in West Virginia. Me and my friend Mike Dave Church and Bill Baker. Bill Baker, when I went to school, he took over the leadership of the state. But even though he's still listed as a member, he told me personally that he's not doing anything with National Liberty Alliance. As to why, I'll just let you take that up with him. But I'm wondering...
We're trying to get enough volunteers to make phone calls to try to, get people back involved. We have a lot of people that were very involved, and they kind of fall away as time goes on. You know, the battle we have, it's been a long battle. For me, it's been 20 years. I've been in this battle for 20 years, going back to 2000. 1999 is when I had my first problems with the government. And it's been a battle ever since.
He has the stamp, and he has some of the other critical information.
If he's got the seal and all that information, he should pass it on to someone else. We are going through all the people that have done those things. They've gotten addresses and the seals for the state, for the unified state common law grand juries. And, if they're not going to be active with that, they should pass it on to someone else. But we are, again, making phone calls, contacting people. You know, we've got almost 9,000 members now. And we got a lot of phone calls to make, and it's going to take time. You know, one of the problems is that people are impatient, and in today's environment, people expect things to happen now, right away. And with what we're doing, it's been taking years. And National Liberty Alliance, and with the plan we have, you know, I guess I'm trying to think when we actually, I think it was 2013 is when we actually formed the name National Liberty Alliance, I think. So that's like 7 years. Before that, we're involved with, of course, other things. We're really New York Committeemen, where we started, and then New York Liberty Alliance, and then National Liberty Alliance. And we've been building this website and gathering all this information and creating these educations and bringing just a tremendous amount of information out there and organizing the nation. You know, you were involved. That took quite some time. We started one county at a time. And eventually we got to every county, and we had leadership in lots of counties and state leaders, but a lot of people, you know, I guess they don't stay endure. You know, you have to endure. We have to continue to push forward. So hopefully we can get a lot of these people back involved, especially now because things are about to make major changes soon. And the excitement is going to be there, and the actual changes are going to be happening. But again, for people to stick to this for 7 years, it's tough for them to do, unfortunately. But we have to.
That's why my message is that if you want me to take charge of West Virginia again, I'm open to doing that. I do have another issue. That wasn't my main issue, but I do have another issue. This is just a question. Have you ever...
Can you repeat that statement? Because I missed that. If we wanted what with Virginia?
If you want me to be the coordinator of West Virginia, I'll take it over again.
Oh, definitely we can use you. Get a hold of Jan and he'll connect you with the right person. Or Francine, did you want to say something?
I've already got his name and number. I'll call him tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Okay. And so.
Okay, you said you had another question.
Have you ever heard of the Treaty of Peace?
The Treaty of what?
The Treaty of Peace 2020.
No, I never heard of it.
Go to philpudok.com and look at what he's doing.
You don't have to spell that. Phil, P-H-I-L?
Yeah, H-U-D-O-K. philpudok.com. It's all one word, .com. I'll send some information to Jan, and I'm interested to know, you just do a little bit of research on that, and I'll tune in next week to see what you have to say about it, if anything.
philhubok.com.
D like dog. D like dog. Phil Hudok.
phildubok?
H-U-D-O-K.
H-U-B-O-K. Got it. Okay.
Right.
All right, I'll take a look. I'll see if I can find that site, and I'll take a look. I don't have too much time to really get too deep into it. Hopefully, I'll be able to get a general idea of looking at it.
Well, it's a way for people to get out of the corporation of the United States of America. That's what it's about, being free. I think you'll like this.
Okay, well, you know, we've been through that whole process. It doesn't work, and what happens is it's just acknowledging the fiction and empowering them. By doing things to try to, we acknowledge them as something, and we're doing something to be disconnected from them, and that only empowers them more, number one. And number two, they don't pay attention to any of that stuff anyway. If they want to get you, they're going to get you. I'll take a look. I'll take a look, and I'll comment on it.
I will take. He already has a court award.
I will take a look at the website, and let's talk about it next week.
Yes. Okay.
Try to get into the queue early, because sometimes Gerard takes over, and I usually try to stay on the whole evening anyway, but sometimes I'll walk away for a while here or there. So try to get into the queue early.
Okay, I did. So I'll talk to you later. God bless. Thank you.
Okay, you too. Godspeed. Thanks, Anthony. Okay, let's take next, what is that, Caleb?
Can you guys hear me all right?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Actually, it's not so much a question. It's more like a statement. And if there's anything I'm wrong with what I'm saying, please let me know. But the problem really comes down to there's the civil courts and there's the common law. And this is not for you because you already know it. But the civil law, basically, from what I understand, it's contracts. If you don't have a contract, they don't have anything. And then when people bring up the whole point of traffic courts, traffic under the Black's Law Dictionary is that you're using your vehicle in a commercial capacity. So when you go to court, there is no contract and there is no you're not using your vehicle in the commercial capacity. But I had a case where I told the judge that I needed my trial by jury. They denied me. They gave me a bench trial, and for my defense, they ended up dismissing the charges, but I was going to put the state trooper on the stand and ask him about his oath of office to the state and the federal constitution. And then basically when he says, you know, he understands it or he gives an opinion, the second part was, have you ever towed a vehicle? And of course the answer is going to be yes. Then the person has to, I'd ask him, if they provided due process of the law, which of course the answer is no. Did they get paid for the property that was removed, which is also guaranteed by the federal constitution? Of course the answer is no. So you turn to the judge, and you're going to have to dismiss this man's affidavit for the fact he's an oath breaker. There's three ARS codes for Arizona Revised Statutes, which is theft, embezzlement, and extortion, because he's operating under the color of law. And then, of course, it's treason by sedition. So... there's a lot of things going. The only thing I didn't know is how do you prosecute? I mean, I don't even care about the suing part. I think the problem that a lot of people have is what is their recourse on handling the actual government with an actual without actually having a militia formed to be able to draw a line in the sand to face these people. They basically can bulldoze. I understand that the common law grand jury is supposed to be there to defend people, but ultimately this goes back to the woman who was talking about getting hit in the head or the guy who got hit in the head with the skillet. It is ultimately the responsibility of the people. Common law, the whole point is if you have a problem with somebody, you're not looking at dealing with things in statutory. It needs to go through an Article III court. You need to prosecute the case. You have to present your evidence. Tell them what you want for as your just compensation. And if you have enough evidence and you can convince the jury, then you will actually, you know, you get paid, or the person goes to jail, or a combination thereof. Everybody seems to be thinking that the government needs to take care of their problems for them. Ultimately, responsibility, your self-defense, and I'm not even talking about Second Amendment, it comes down to you as the individual. The only point of the courts under common law is a place to arbitrate if someone does injure you. The criminal justice system, as well as the traffic laws, are all bupkis, because under common law, you have to have an injured party. They're basically providing hypotheticals. If you're driving fast, you're potentially going to get into an accident, and they're taking you out of Article III courts because they know that there is no injured party. It's ultimately up to us as the citizens. A grand jury, I think, is a tool that'll help people. But again, people can't depend on, not so much depend, but people shouldn't be relying on other people. People need to unify. People need to educate, and then people need to form militias and literally hold the judge accountable. A judge asked me about my fight with the courts, and I said, listen, you guys have the district attorney's office, which is basically a law office that justifies what you're doing. You have all the muscle, and then you have the guise of law with you, and what do I have? I don't have the money. It's just me. But if you had a unified front of like 20 people going into court saying, hey, you know what, you guys are violating this, what, that, the other, the federal constitution, if two or more people are witness, it could be tried as treason by sedition if you have enough evidence, and people need to draw that line in the sand. I think it's really nice that we're trying to do things in the correct sense of putting motions and stuff like that in the court, but at the end of the day, people need, the tree of liberty needs to be refreshed with the blood of patriots as well as tyrants. And I'm not condoning violence, but there comes a time where people have to draw the line in the sand and say, tell the bully, hey, no.
Well, let me try to respond to some of that. I mean, because we don't have too much more time here, and we still have a few people. I'm going to try to take a few more calls. But you know, a couple of things here. First of all, you know, when you were questioning the police officer and was going to move towards that process of questioning him. You know, then you got the judge and you got the prosecutor, and if you're going to include the police officer, if you're going to go after the police officer, really it's the judge and the prosecutor you got to go after. Remember, that's a conspiracy. There's three people. There's two people, now there's three people involved in this process to try to convict you in a jurisdiction unknown, traffic law. And traffic law, if you go look up traffic law, if you look up these codes on the tickets that you get, it does bring you to TL, traffic law. And traffic law, when you start to read, everything is commercial. And so the first order of business is, I don't have commercial flights to begin with.
Yes.
So, excuse me. So I don't participate, you know, I'm not in that whole process. The other thing is an Article III court is also an equity court, so they do deal with statutes. But again, it doesn't apply to you. That's the key thing. The big problem is really you're in civil law courts, which is something that they made up altogether. They fused together common law, so they claim they haven't got any. What they call common law ultimately is a decision of other court decisions where they'll use this and say this is similar to that, and they'll use whatever decisions were made in that court, try to apply it to this court, and, you know, it goes on to all this stuff. And that's not common law. But that's what lawyers, most bar attorneys, believe is common law, is the collection of that kind of, you know, of court cases. Now, we use court cases in order to make certain points, you know, principles, particularly principles or meanings of phrases and words and things of that nature. But nevertheless, again, going back to what you're doing and making your argument should not be on the topic, because, first of all, you're giving them some authority on the one hand to be able to judge you, while you're denying what their charges are as being it shouldn't be applied to you, that it's unlawful to apply to you. But the court is applying it upon you. The prosecutor is applying it upon you. The key to success in this is really, again, moving into federal court for cause, because they're violating your right of due process. You cannot get a due process in that court. You cannot get a due process in an equity court. You can't get a due process in a civil court, which is what they've created under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, which came into power and authority in 1938. And under Rule 2, they abrogated common law and replaced it with civil law. They clearly said that. And they won't address it. None of these courts will address it. But nevertheless, that's what they've done. It's right on their website. It's clear as a bell. They've interpreted exactly the way I'm saying it, that it's interpreted. It's now civil law. And they did that by rule. I mean, just think about it. The people can't even do that. Legislators can't even do that. But the courts did it by rule. By a rule, not even by a statute, not even by any kind of what they would call a code, a law. But going in there to make the argument there, and even the jury that might be pulled together in order to make the decision, even that is statutory. Everything is statutory. It's all tainted. They're controlled by statutes. All of the charges are statutes. They rule on statutes. The court is statutory. Has nothing to do with you. So you just got to get out of the court. Go to federal court for cause, and you stick on your argument to the Constitution, and you demand that this court, in your wherefore clause, commands this court to cease and desist, and then, you know, get your damages, which I usually do in silver coins. $1,000. I like that one number, 1,000. So 1,000 silver dollars is the penalty for violating my rights, and it's for every individual involved. And if they violated three different unalienable rights of mine, then it's $3,000 from each of them in silver, which $1,000 in silver in the market today is $14,000. So anyway, that's where I would go, and that's how I would do it. I would not. I've done it before. Again, I learned through the School of Hard Knocks. We've been in courts going month after month after month. I refuse to do it. I go one time. They get one chance, one choice. That's it. It's gone. Moves.
So in the future, because what ended up happening was the judge ended up basically giving me a bench trial, even though I told her I object. The federal constitution guarantees me due process of the law.
Right, but all of your arguments, they really don't care about it. It doesn't mean anything to them. They don't care.
Okay, so it all has to be moved to the federal court. So you let them do whatever they're going to do, and then take.
Yeah, you don't let them do nothing. You go in. You're here by special appearance. I always appear by paper, by special appearance. They may force me to physically come. I'll come in. I'm in by special appearance. I'll exercise the paper I filed in the court with them. I'll inform them that they need to dismiss the case. I'll start with the prosecutor. He'll deny it. He'll bring before the judge, try to plant some kind of a date. We're going to come back. I'm going to deny the date. I'm going to say, no, I'm challenging this court. And if this court doesn't, you don't have the jurisdiction, and if you don't cease and desist and let me go free, I'm going to move this case into federal court for cause. They'll pursue it anyway, and then I'll reach into my back pocket and file it with the court and with the prosecutor, and I'll leave, and I'll see him in federal court.
Do you have that on the website, a kind of a step-by-step on
Yeah,
that?
You sound like you might have enough experience to be able to do it, but you got to be careful, you know. But, yeah, if you're looking at the – are you looking at your browser?
I am. Let me go national. I'm at the website.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, if you're looking at your browser, you can see I got my browser. I'm sharing my browser right now. Under education, come down to court forms, processes, and instructions. Do you see that?
Yep. Clicked on it.
Okay. You click on that. All right. Now, there's two. This is one, maybe the only page that is, you have to be a premier member to get to. A premier member is someone that's given $5 a month or more donation.
Sure.
And that gets you to this page, and it also gets you to the government by consent course. But on this page, we have a lot of stuff, you know, access to our government course. We have instructions and forms of challenge jurisdiction. We have forms to move your case for cause, instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus, how to move the court for enforcement, notice and demands, different downloads, a lot of common law stuff here, memorandums that you can use, you know, if you're in a tax court, we have a memorandum concerning that. We have a, you know, there's a lot of power here. What is a court of record or a memorandum of a court of record? These guys don't know what a court of record is. I have spoken to so many lawyers, spoke about a court of record. They said, this is a court of record. I said, what are you talking about? It's not a court of record. We keep a record here. They think a court of record is a record that keeps a court of record that keeps a record. That's what these lawyers believe. They're taught this in bar school.
Right. They're civil. They're taught civil law because a lawyer is supposed to be versed in common law, but it that's just not the case anymore. So.
All right. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff here, and you know, these landmark Supreme Court cases, we have them listed other places. But this stuff here, we have these memorandums listed in other places. We just pulled it together.
Okay.
But this other stuff, the downloads, how to write a notice of demand, moving the court for enforcement, habeas corpus, for cause, and challenging jurisdiction, you know, that's all paperwork you can use and, you know, create what you need for your own, whatever it is that you're doing.
One of the bottom question that I kind of had on this whole thing was,
and last one because they've got a couple more people, but then
I understand it's going to the answer is probably going to be ignorance, but any law enforcement officer who has the oath of office to the federal constitution, how can they do their job? And
every person in government takes that oath because they don't know what they're even saying. Look at. When these people raise their hand to swear to uphold and defend the Constitution, the question to that I ask them, were you lying, or what? Because they don't even know the Constitution. How
Correct.
Can you take an oath to the Constitution that you don't know? Look at. You got to keep the slave dumb. And the American people have become enslaved. And until they step up and take authority and power and have the knowledge of their heritage and who they are and who makes the law, that they make the law, and we have government by consent, and you take control of those, until they do those things, they'll continue to be a slave. Okay? And you got to keep the slave ignorant. That's why we don't have civics in school. That's why we don't learn the Constitution. You go to law school, they don't teach you the Constitution. There's a lot of things they don't teach you about. They don't teach you about, I was talking with Brent, they don't teach you about, for instance, the grand jury, the calling of the grand jury, the makeup of the grand jury. So you're not going to learn those things there, but we need to learn them. We need to start teaching our children in first grade, literally, with history, talking about our founding fathers. You know, of course, baby steps there, but you move up. Every grade, you know, from 1 through 12, if that's what we're going to continue to have schooling for 12 years, well, then in 12, by the time they get to 12th grade, every child should be coming out with a college-level education. Maybe not, of course, with a doctrine or anything, but the the mathematics, the history, all the necessary English, everything they need to know. Okay, they should be at college level by the time they get out. They waste so much time in school, and they teach them. They're too busy trying to indoctrinate our children. They don't teach them how to think. They teach them what to think. We have to turn that around, bring it back to a classical education, teach children how to think, get them stimulated in the classes, teach them these things. When a child comes out of school, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, last year in school, They should know how to drive. They should know how to handle a weapon. They should know the Constitution. They should be able to defend themselves in court. They should understand how the court system is. They should know the difference between law and equity. They should know our founding fathers. They should know their heritage. They should know all these things. Mm-hmm. And yet they know nothing. We know nothing. I knew nothing until I started to research and educate myself. Before that, I was as dumb as an ox myself in these things.
I'll leave you on this, though. The reason why my dog is in the fight is I'm an ex-combat vet, and I sort of defend and uphold the federal constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. And until
well,
I
amen.
Got that from war, about 2 years later, I had a vehicle towed, and I ended up starting to study law because I wanted to either find out was I in the right or were they in the wrong. And but I appreciate your time. Maybe I'll join you guys tomorrow night as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll take maybe another. Well, hopefully we can do them quick. We can take them all, but we'll see how it goes. It's getting late. It's 13 after. But David from North Carolina, hopefully we can keep it short. And if you want to talk
all
longer.
I got a quick question. And the question is that I've been talking to a bright individual. That is a common law attorney. However, what I want to do is that I'd like to file or have him to file or you to file my denial of jurisdiction that I got off the National Liberty Alliance website.
Well, we do file papers on behalf of people in different cases which is really a challenge of jurisdiction ultimately, and
right.
We do it in the form of an amicus curiae.
Okay. Should I talk to him about possibly doing that as well, or should I talk to you about doing it? Because I have changed the caption.
Who's the other person you're talking about?
Our friend,
you talking about Jim?
Winters. No.
Brent. You talking about Brent?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, if you're working out something with Brent, can you continue to work out with Brent? If you need something else, then you can talk with us. But yeah, Brent is a common law lawyer. I don't know what he can or can't do for you. I don't know if you're in the same state with him or anything or what.
Well, my question was, is that should I file that denial of jurisdiction, calls for denial of jurisdiction, or should
I? Well, it's a challenge. You do as you challenge the jurisdiction. If you have the knowledge to do these things, you can right here. I don't know if you're looking at your at the browser I got open here. Right there, it says instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. Okay, we have it in PDF forms and Word. You can go through that. If you have enough experience to work through the courts and write papers, then you should be able to use that. But again, you know, you got to understand the next step because it's a chess game. And first time playing chess, you don't know the moves. And then as time goes on, you start to learn those moves, and then you start to be able to respond, you know. And next thing, you know, first order of business when you challenge jurisdiction, you know, that judge is going to try to take it, and then you got to tell him he's got to recuse himself. You got to go through that process, you know, because once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided.
I heard you say last Monday night not for us to try to file any of those forms. Now, I changed the caption.
You can take these forms and you know, address it to your case. And use the ideas, you know, to address it and add to it whatever you want to do to it. It's just basically a form that you can start to work off of. But the problem is people trying to use the forms and not understanding how the court works and what the judge is going to say and what's going to happen, because they're going to deny everything you're trying to do. They're going to fight
absolutely.
You every way to way. And you got to know what to do in the court. And you got to be careful because, you know, once you say something on paper, if you make any changes with words in the courtroom, all of a sudden you just negated part of what you filed on paper and changed the whole process to whatever it is that you said.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful. And again, I don't make any. I'm not going to make any arguments in the course except in the court, except for the fact of denial of the challenging of jurisdiction, which must be decided, and it can't be decided by you, and it's got to go to the court above you. So if you're a town court or a city court, well, we need to move on to the state court to get that decision on jurisdiction. And they're probably not going to rule correct anyway either. They're going to send you back because they believe in all this administrative stuff and civil stuff. Then you're going to have to move it into federal court. So you can really just move it straight into federal court anyway, because they're not going to go through the procedure of trying to go through
the decision. I believe that. I've been messing with them for about as long as you have, about 20 years, and I'm exhausted from messing with them, because all I've been asking for is a jury trial, and they
they don't want to give it to you, because if they give you a jury trial, first of all, it's going to be a civil law jury. It's going to be a statutory jury, and it doesn't mean anything anyway. There's the jury still denial of due process.
That's right. I understand. Okay, that's it. I'll talk to Brent a little further on it.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, Take a Russ. You got the mic. David, Russ. Russ, are you there? 910 area code. Russ David or David Russ? Okay, we'll move to the next caller. One more time for David. Okay, let's take Gadget Man, Ron. You got the mic, go right ahead. Ron once, twice, Ron, Gadget Man. Last time for Ron. Okay, wireless caller. 985 area code. You got the mic. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, my name is Katie, and I'm from Texas.
Okay, Katie from Texas.
So I was calling because of challenging jurisdiction in a county that is well known for corruption. I'm a little intimidated by Smith County, Texas, and I was told by my attorney before I learned more about your website and the education y'all offer. I had hired an attorney, and he said, "Well, the judges, if you start coming at them with being unconstitutional, they'll just revoke your bond and you'll go to jail." So what happens when you...
They are evil that way, so you do have to be careful what you do in court. And again, you got to move things along. You give them one opportunity and you move it along. You got to be very polite and nice. Be very careful what you say. And don't be too harsh. I try to do most of my signaling to the judge in paperwork. Most of them are dumb as a box of rocks, so... the federal judges, they kind of get it usually, but the other judges, maybe they just don't want to get it. So, yeah, it's very dangerous in these courts.
Okay, so they could just ignore the paperwork completely.
Well, yes, they can just ignore it, but then you got to move it to the next step. Again, you mentioned, I think the first thing you said is talk about moving it to federal court for court. Did you bring that up?
No?
Okay. Yeah, that was someone else. Well, again, I don't want to be in a court that doesn't have jurisdiction over me. I used to go to traffic court. I always write a paper. I file it. Half the times, I just never hear back from the court anymore, and half the times, I got to go. When I go, I just pay the ticket and move on, because I don't have the time. Right now, I'm just making an exception. I'm tired of it. I'm not going to deal with it no more. So I'm going to take them into federal court.
Okay, so what if challenging jurisdiction, if they don't pay attention to it or if they don't respond, once you file the movement to get it into federal court, Do they have to put it into federal court like you?
Oh, they don't have a choice in the matter no more once you move it into federal court. You move the court and you give notice of the move.
Okay.
And then they have to answer in the federal court. And you, everything you're talking about, you're not, no longer talking about the details that they want to talk about. You talk about what you want to talk about. The only thing you can talk about is your right of due process that they're violating. That's how you beat them, and it shuts that. You're using that to try to shut that court down, cease and desist, number one, and also receive damages for violating your right of due process and any other rights you can connect to it from every individual involved and whatever price you want to do it for. And to stay on the common law side thing, it should always be in silver dollars.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, thank you so much.
Educate. Get educated. You know, take our courses and then look at these things here, read the papers, and just education should never stop. Okay, education should be the part of everyone's life. There's an enjoyment in education. I find an enjoyment in researching and looking at these things. I find it exciting and revealing and empowering. And so, you know, educate yourself and don't stop, you know. Educate yourself till the day you die. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, final caller. Let's try to keep it short. Dave from North Carolina.
Well, that one would be. But yeah, I've got some of that stuff somewhere.
The sheriff's book?
Yeah. I'm not real sure where, but I got it. I might have took it and put it back in here.
That's all right. I'll get one.
Oh, you want a hand, but what you want.
Yeah, I don't have this.
I don't want to do
that. You have the little books that you